You heard Ryan. Apparently, the Cubs are afraid to play a triple header.
Come on, Cubs. Could. I mean, think about it. That first game's at noon. You could squeeze one in at 3, right?
Absolutely, you could.
Who's done a triple header?
Bring recently the orange slices.
Ever.
They don't have triple headers.
No, I don't
think
they'll do that. I'm sure there's something in the players' union that it's some kind of agreement that they can't do that.
2 is the maximum you can allow at one time.
But they're starting to back up here. They've already got 2 rainouts they got to make up.
No.
I don't think it's ever going to stop raining, so they don't have to worry about making them up.
The rain is forever now?
It's okay, though, because if you notice, everybody's lawns are so wonderfully green. It's like a Scotts commercial.
Yeah, right. Those dandelions are really taking hold.
That's what they would say in a dandelion, in a Scotts commercial, what Ryan just said. That was great.
Can we just take a nap on the air today during both shows?
Because
we have a doubleheader
every
day. It's
a good napping day, isn't it?
It is a good napping day, and we do have a doubleheader every day.
I just realized that.
Yeah, we
I'm
do.
Thinking, you know, a doubleheader, the teams are probably really tired and emotionally drained.
Sure they are. Of course they are.
It's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I know something is troubling you, and I don't know if it's okay to ask you on the air if it is. If you can talk about it, talk about it, and if you're not comfortable, then Ryan will say more lines from Scott's commercials.
Should I break out the accent?
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah, the Scottish accent. Yeah.
Yes.
Why does it have to be like Willie the groundskeeper from The Simpsons? And can I just tell you something real quickly about Andrea Darlis? I love her, but I have lost all respect for her. Did you hear her say she has never seen an episode of The Simpsons?
That hurt my feelings.
How could you go through life without ever watching at least one episode?
Well,
it's one of the best shows on TV.
People have said the same thing about you and your aversion to Sound of Music. That it's
that's just stupid.
That you can't avoid it. It's everywhere. But The Simpsons are on. They're on right now. They'll be on in an hour. They'll be on in 3 hours. They're always on somewhere. How could you miss it?
I know.
And she has a great sense of humor.
Exactly.
So you would think she'd go out of her way to see at least one episode. It's been on for 21 years, right?
It has been on that long.
I think 21 years, I think. Give or take a year or two. Yeah.
So I was Bart's age when the show started.
How about that?
And I'm
Ryan?
About to be Homer's age in a couple of years.
How about
I'm
that?
I'm dead serious.
But you really have to try hard to not see The Simpsons. There's a couple shows that are just on TV nonstop. The Friends is always on. Seinfeld's always on.
Which is, it's always good. At the end of the night when you don't want to commit to something great.
Right.
Last night I caught up on The Family, that show I think on ABC that you and I watch, and mm-hmm. it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that gets renewed.
I would like to see that happen.
And then I caught up on Fear the Walking Dead, and mm-hmm. then I wasn't really ready to go to bed yet, but I didn't want to commit to something major, so Seinfeld's always the way to go.
It works, doesn't it? I agree.
I'm trying to avoid an issue.
I'm serious when I say this. I know something is troubling you, and if you don't want to talk about it, we don't have to, but I know something's on your mind, I can tell.
Well, it was just, I had a mystery this morning when I got in the car.
What was it, Jessica Fletcher?
Who's that?
From Murder, She Wrote.
Was
another show that Andrea refuses to watch.
I saw episodes of that, but I didn't know the name.
Yeah.
Murder.
Right.
Angela Lansbury.
Yeah.
Was that who Jessica Fletcher was?
Absolutely.
Huh. Thank God I have
Very
you.
Nice.
Who needs a
Very
Googler
nice.
When you have a Bill left?
I'm your human Googler. I was going to say it's not easy to say, but I proved that, didn't I?
All right, so Jimmy Mack went out last night.
Yeah.
And I got in the car this morning to go to work, and the tire gauge thing was on, the little light. And that could mean a flat tire. It could mean just the air has fluctuated in the tires, and it has been warm and cold and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed that, and then I noticed on Mother's Day, he handed me a lipstick and said, "Is this yours?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah." So I put it in the car. And this morning, as I noticed the little tire gauge, and then I'm like, "Oh, this is my lipstick." I went to put it on.
Yeah.
I don't wear this color.
Oh, no. And where was this lipstick found? In the car?
In the car.
Oh.
It's a foreign lipstick, not my color.
Oh. Yeah, I'm sure there's nothing to worry about. Kevin, play some music. Quick, play some music.
I just want to show you the color. My color is, and we can post this too, my color is kind of light and fleshy.
Yeah.
And
that's light and fleshy, what you're showing
and
me.
And the color I found.
Oh, that's completely different.
Is
that's very
goth.
Dark. Very dark.
Kind of goth.
That's not even close to yours.
And I was going to put it on this morning, and when I, you know, took the cap off and unscrewed the tube.
Yes.
I said, this
isn't...
That's
what he might be doing, too, by the way.
I said, this isn't my color.
Right.
So I thought, okay, this is weird. Why is there... And then I'm like, oh, my friend Sue was in the car. She doesn't wear a color this dark.
Oh,
this is very goth.
Oh, no.
So unless Jim is cross-dressing...
You know, it's a new age, Wendy.
The boys have a girlfriend?
Hey, maybe that's it.
No, because Michael hasn't driven yet. Dylan may just be in the car with a girl in the driveway. Who knows?
That's possible.
But I was a little confused.
It was confused, the first thought?
Well, it was like, I got to call Jim.
Yes. What did he say?
Well, it all unraveled.
Oh, no.
We solved a mystery this morning. Can we take a quick break and tell you the mystery has been solved?
All right. Is Jim still with us?
We'll find out.
Right. More of this in a minute. It's Murder, She Wrote on WGN. Something horrible has happened to Wendy, maybe. Possibly.
Well,
I'm hoping not, because you wouldn't tell the story if it had an awful ending, would you?
Who knows? Well, because
maybe.
It would, you know... I'd win.
I guess
I have
you
a microphone
win.
In front of me.
Right.
So
right.
It could go either way. I found Jim went out last night. Jimmy Mack used one of our cars, the one I typically drive to work. It came back with a little tire light on.
Where did he tell you he was going?
He was going to...
Just did he say, I'm just going out. That's all you need to know. Out.
No, he was going to meet with some Lagunitas guy.
The brewery?
Yeah, who also is a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, but he said it's a guy, right? He said, I'm meeting some guy from the Lagunitas Brewery.
Yeah, he said,
right?
We're just doing dinner. I'll be home early.
And if he said he was getting a little something-something, that is the kind of beer
right,
that they sell.
I know.
So that is...
Oh,
I know that.
Right, Ryan.
I don't think he knew that at the time, but yes. So he went out, big deal. I stayed home and watched Jesus Christ Superstar with Michael, and then Dylan jumped in at the end, and we enjoyed it, and I sang every song, and they got annoyed with me.
Typical Monday night.
Yeah. And then, so this morning, the little tire light is on, so I called and said, did you hit a curb, or did you hit a really big pothole?
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like getting a flat tire on the way to work, and he says, no, everything's good, but, you know, the weather's been fluctuating, and sometimes that happens where the little light sensor goes on, and you can just reset. It. And
did he sound nervous at all during any of this?
Uh-uh.
Not at all. All right.
And so I said, I reset it and it hasn't come back on. So I think we're good to go. If it was a flat tire, it would keep coming back on.
Sure, of course.
And I said, by the way, when we were at the Home Depot on Mother's Day, you picked up a tube of lipstick and said to me, is this yours? And
yeah.
I said, yeah, because that's my brand.
Mm-hmm.
So I grabbed it and put it in my purse, and I went to put it on this morning. It's not my color.
Mm.
And he goes, oh, it must not be yours.
Mm.
And I said, okay, well, why is it in the car? Are you cross-dressing?
Did you ask him that?
Yes. I said, do you have some goth friend that has been in the car recently? Because it's really dark, and I will put a picture up on our Facebook page. And he said, no, remember I handed it to you. And
yeah.
I said, yeah. And I said, where was it? In the car? And he said, no, we pulled up at Home Depot, and when I opened the door to get out, I saw a tube of MAC lipstick.
Uh-huh.
And I always accuse him of not paying attention to detail, but he did, and he said, oh, this must be Wendy. So he picked it up off the ground.
Oh, he did.
At the Home Depot, and said, is this yours? And I just saw the MAC tube, and I said, yeah.
It must be yours.
So then I thought it was in the car the whole time, and I thought that's where he picked it up.
Yeah.
He picked it up off the ground and gave it to me.
I can't believe you bought that.
I just thought
it's weird. A way better ending than what this could have meant. Which
but he couldn't have come up with something that
quick. He's doing a production
of
the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and you don't even know it.
He's a cheap transvestite from Transylvania.
So where is the lipstick now?
It's in my hand. I went to put it on this morning. I will send we'll put a picture up on our Facebook page. It's totally not my color.
So that would upset you more than the fact that you would have lipsticked up with somebody else's lipstick?
That kind of bothered me more.
That would be bad.
Because, you know, I'm driving in and you get a red light and you put the rearview mirror down and you lipstick up, if you will.
Yeah.
And when I opened it, I was aghast because it looks almost black.
It's a really dark shade.
Have you ever seen me in this color? Maybe in the 80s.
Not that dark. Not yeah. that dark. That would not work for you.
So, mystery solved. One is he pays more attention to detail than I thought. Yep. Just saw a tube of MAC lipstick laying on the ground. Why would you give me something that was on the ground?
I'll tell you what, a point in his favor. If you gave me $1,000 for me to tell you what brand of lipstick Terry wears, I'd be out $1,000 because I have no idea at all. Zero.
Well, if you can look, these are exactly identical
tubes.
They
are. But just the mere fact that he knew your brand of lipstick, the color's way off. But give him a point for getting the brand, because I wouldn't have known that.
I do. And you know what? I said, why would you pick something up off the ground and hand it to me?
But he
thought it fell out of the car.
He assumed, of course. Right. So he was helping. He wanted to help you out.
So I could tell by his reaction that he was telling the truth. But I just, you know, if anybody dropped, I'll tell you the color.
Yeah, if somebody wants to swing by the studio and pick up their lipstick, it's here for you.
Well, if you were at the Countryside Home Depot anytime, it's a MAC makeup tube, and it's called Cyber.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
And it comes with your germs on it.
No, I didn't.
You didn't use it.
No, God, no. And, you know, if this is your tube of lipstick, you're probably a nice person, but I still won't use it.
Have you ever shared somebody else's lipstick ever?
Just friends.
Did you really?
God, in sixth grade when we used to wear that Bubblicious, no, that was the bubble gum, but they had like a...
The Dr. Pepper and the Orange Crush and the 7-Up.
Did you wear that too?
No, but I kissed a girl or two who wore that, and it was a nice added incentive.
Hubba hubba.
Because you got to kiss a girl and you had the delicious taste of 7-Up. It was excellent. That was the ultimate killing two birds with one stone when you're in eighth grade. That was great.
Wow, an Uncola kiss.
It was an Uncola kiss. Yeah.
All right. Well, if anyone would like to claim their MAC makeup, MAC lipstick Cyber, it was in the Home Depot parking lot in Countryside when I bought mulch.
I would say to you, if this happens again anytime soon, I would start to get nervous. Like, one time makes sense, but if this happens two or three more times before the month is out, I think he's using you. Don't you? If he just mentions other places, like if you guys are shopping at Jewel and he finds lipstick, and then you go somewhere else, he's at Target and he finds lipstick, then there's a pattern.
All right. In your defense, Bill, and I will say, again, I accuse Jim of never paying attention to detail.
Sure.
He did know the exact makeup brand. But if you look at the name on there, why wouldn't he know that?
Oh, it's his own name. It's his own last name. It says Mac really big on there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah,
and,
I don't
and
have my
what
own.
Is my color? I think it's Blankety.
It's too small for me to read. Oh, it is. It's called Blankety Amplified.
Okay.
Who named that? Who's it? Mel Blanc? Is he in charge of naming lipstick? Who named it that? That's ridiculous.
All right. Well, Blankety. The case of the unexplained lipstick tube is solved.
Well done, Nancy Drew.
Thank
well
you
done.
Very much.
All right. A break. We'll take a quick break, and then Ryan's going to give you the news, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I don't understand why Ryan wouldn't let Orion do the news. He had business news to share with America, and you didn't want him to do it. I don't get it.
I don't.
Doesn't make sense.
Sorry.
You know what I saw last night that was so disturbing? And it's disturbing on two different levels. I'll explain. First of all, they showed, I was watching the Channel 9 news, and it was Tom Negevin and it was Julie Unruh. They were filling in, and then they cut to Tom. You know, Tom's doing the weather, Tom Skilling. And he does our weather, but then he shows the horrendous tornadoes that are going on in Oklahoma. And he's explaining the tornadoes in great detail. And then they show footage of the tornadoes. And it's as scary as it sounded before they showed the footage, when you saw the actual footage of them, it was just, I was safe at home watching video of it, and I was afraid at what I was seeing. Because you just, you know, they show the destruction, certainly. They show the houses, and you say to yourself, boy, that's one of those cases where one day you have a full house and everything's in order, and then just minutes later, everything you have is just strewn all about the state of Oklahoma. But here's the part that really got to me. They show it from several different angles. They show the footage, and you know, everybody now has the ability, thanks to their cell phone, all they have to do is push a button and videotape the destruction. So they show it from all different angles, and some of them were dangerously close. But what really disturbed me was they show all these cars driving toward the tornado. Like, it's human nature, if you see something that big and that scary, to go, I got to go the other way. But all these people now, because they have cell phones and they want to capture the videotape of this, not just like one truck or two cars or three, but all the traffic is going toward the tornado, and you see people holding their cell phones up.
And the windshield wipers going.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's 22 videos on CNN of these tornadoes. But here's the thing, and, you know, we should talk to Tom Skilling about this, too. I have a completely irrational fear of tornadoes, and the more I think about it, it's not that irrational.
I don't think it is irrational. I don't think it is at all.
There is no way. I mean, you see it ahead of you.
Right.
When you said, why would you drive toward it? Why wouldn't you turn the other way? Which for a half a second, I'm like, oh, my God, duh, that's what you do. But you don't know where that tornado is going to come. All of a sudden, it can double back and
it could
then get you while you're driving away.
It definitely could, but common sense would almost dictate, if you see a tornado in a certain direction, to not drive toward the tornado. I understand people wanting to capture it on video, and I guess maybe sell the footage to different news outlets. I get it. But that would not be me. I would not be driving full speed toward the tornado. They showed this one intersection where it was a stop. It was a four-way stop, and people weren't even stopping. They were just going out of their way to drive toward the tornado. And I couldn't judge the distance. I was trying to figure out exactly how close they could have been to it. But you could see it was like it was right there. It's like, don't do it. It's not worth it. It's really not.
But what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to go under an overpass and park your car there.
But there weren't any. They didn't show any underpasses or overpasses. They just didn't show. I mean, it was all pretty flat.
But see, then what do you do if you're in your car? We should talk to. I know Tom Skilling does that tornado thing every year. And I've watched it.
Very knowledgeable about those.
They've changed the overpass thing, too. I don't think they recommend that
anymore. Is that true? Is that different, Steve?
Right.
But see, now, you know, if you stay in your car, the car can get picked up and blown around, so that shouldn't be good. Do you get out of your car and lay down in a ditch? I think that is what you're supposed to do.
Is that a better alternative? I guess it is, then, I guess.
I'd feel safer chasing it in a car than, you know, laying in a ditch, but that's what they say.
And most of the injuries and deaths are from the debris that falls on you. So, you know, do you keep a spare shield of metal in your car and go lay in a ditch? Do you rip off
just to cover yourself
the hood
it?
Of your car and cover yourself? That's a good idea. They should have a removable hood.
Just for tornadoes?
Yes.
There used to be, I grew up in Oak Forest, and it's in the southwest suburbs, and when we moved there, it was one of several places in the area that they referred to as Tornado Alley.
That was part of it?
That was part of it. I mean, Plainfield is the one that is, that's like the Tornado Alley.
That's the original Tornado Alley.
That's, yeah.
Yours is Tornado Alley Light?
There were a couple of places that were called Tornado Alley, but Oak Forest was one of them, and I'm trying to remember. I don't think we ever had a full-blown tornado. There were a couple times
Oak Lawn
in the summer.
Did.
I know Oak Lawn did. That one's famous. But the sky would become this weird kind of orangish purple.
Green
and
was in there, too.
Yeah.
And very still.
Yeah, extremely still. And then you'd get incredible winds. But they used to warn us that there was one part of the basement, and I don't remember which corner
like
it was.
Like the southeast corner or northwest corner.
But now I know that they've now rescinded that. I don't know what made them believe that, but even at the time, because my mom would be down there making sure we were all in that particular corner, and I kept thinking, I don't know, if a tornado is going to rip our house up, the tornado is not going to be that exact on where exactly we are and where the destruction will be.
There was also, you were supposed to crack your windows a little bit.
In the house?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Because of the pressure, if you didn't crack the windows a little bit, then your house could explode. My dad was civil defense director of Brookfield, and I was scared to death every time there was a tornado
warning.
Yeah,
right, I know.
Because that sky, as you mentioned, would be greenish-purple, just weird, and it was so ominous, and then you'd hear the siren, and it was like, this is it, I'm dying.
Yeah.
I overreact a little bit to this day.
No, I totally get it, because I mean, I've been in places. When I was traveling doing stand-up, I was in a couple places a day or two after a tornado. And we've all seen it on the news, where part of the block looks like nothing happened. And then just across the street, houses are decimated. And you just say, wow, talk about no rhyme or reason. You know, it just follows a weird course. But I don't understand driving toward it.
Well, according to ready.gov, you're supposed to go to a pre-designated area, such as a safe room. Do you have a safe room in your house?
No.
I got to get one.
We do not.
Basement, storm cellar, or the lowest building level. So if you're in an apartment building,
go as
do
low
that.
As you can go.
If there's no basement, go to the center of a small interior room on the lowest level.
Now, they never used to say the center. They always said you want to gravitate toward one of the corners, which I don't remember which direction, but it was never the center. They said, used to say that's the worst thing you can do.
All right. Closet, interior hallway, away from the corners, windows, doors, and outside walls. Because think about it. If you're in the center of the house and the house blows up or caves in, your
center's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because what if you're in the northwest corner and that's the corner that gets hit? You're in trouble.
Right.
Get under a sturdy table and use your arms to protect your head and your neck. In a high-rise building, go to a small interior room or hallway on the lowest floor possible. That is going to be the one day that I don't care about the elevator. I am going to haul ass down the stairs.
Absolutely. I know.
And if you're in my way, people, look out.
I know.
I will push you out of my way. Put on sturdy shoes.
Got them. Wearing them now.
It makes sense, though. If you're in bed and you hear the tornado warning, I mean, if you have time, grab some sturdy shoes. But if not, you might have some flip-flops on. You could break a toe. I'd rather break a toe than die.
Yeah, always.
And do not open windows, they're saying now.
Isn't it weird how they change their mind on stuff like that?
If you're not in a sturdy building, there's no single research-based recommendations for what last resort action to take because many factors can affect your decision.
Yeah.
Possible actions include immediately get into a vehicle, buckle your seatbelt, and try to drive to the closest sturdy shelter. If your vehicle is hit by flying debris while you're driving, pull over and park. Take cover in a stationary vehicle, put the seatbelt on, and cover your head with your arms in a blanket, coat, or other cushion if possible.
So it's better to be if you're in a car,
drive.
It's better to just stay put somewhere.
Yeah, because if it blows you off the road, your steering wheel's not going to work. You know what I mean? So remain stationary or lie in an area noticeably lower than the level of the roadway and cover your head with your arms in a blanket, coat, or other cushion if possible. That's what I said.
That's
get in a
solid.
Ditch.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, it's so scary. Do not now, as Steve pointed out, get under an overpass or bridge. You're safer in a low, flat location. That has totally turned around.
Right.
Never try to outrun a tornado in urban or congested areas in a car or truck. Instead, leave the vehicle immediately for safe shelter and watch out for flying debris. Flying debris from tornadoes causes most of the fatalities and injuries.
Wow. And so it doesn't say, even if you have a video camera on your phone, drive toward the tornado, because that's what I was seeing a lot of last night on the news.
It doesn't say that, but I think that's a given day and age.
I was shocked by it. All right.
Got to get it on Facebook.
We'll take a break. It is Tech Tuesday. We'll find out what Bridget Carey has for us. That's coming up next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
And today is a Tech Tuesday, a rainy Tech Tuesday. Bridget Carey on the line with us, a CNET senior editor and host of the CNET Update. Bridget, how are you this rainy day? Is it raining where you are?
It's actually quite pleasant in my neck of the woods.
Oh, come on.
Sorry.
Rub
but
it
we
in.
We had a really dreary last week, so, you know.
Well, it's a good day to doodle around on your computer, and who doodles around? I guess diddle around.
What day isn't a good diddle day?
You know, it is such a time suck for me, getting an iPad, an iPhone, a computer. Really, that's all we do. Last night, we're Amazon Prime members, and I wanted to see Jesus Christ Superstar with my son. Bing, bang, boom, it's on Amazon Prime. I bought it. Amazon is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and they're actually out now they're already taking on Netflix, but they're kind of amping things up to even take on YouTube.
What?
Yeah, so starting today, Amazon is allowing anyone the power to upload their own video. And, I mean, the idea is that they hope, you know, they're courting more professional quality videos from media publishers, but they want anyone to just put their video on Amazon Prime, and there are incentives. You could either, charge a subscription if you want to, charge to rent or own the video, but if you put it behind the Prime paywall, and if it's popular, you could earn some bonus prize money, too. So this is just another way of Amazon going, how can we beef up Prime? And on a side note, you know, even make publishers go, should I put it on YouTube or should I try to make money off Amazon?
I mean, you can make money off of YouTube as well, but you have to have a certain amount of hits or downloads or views in order for that to happen. It sounds like Amazon, if you're out to make money and be the next, internet star, Amazon might be the way to go.
Well, I think it makes a lot more sense for people to still go on YouTube if they're doing things from a webcam, for your cat videos, for your kid goes to the dentist, keep those on YouTube, because that's the easier way to make money by going viral. But at the same time, you're seeing a lot of media publishers go, well, wait a second, how can we charge a subscription maybe, or put ads on that we want on a video? And it looks like Amazon's giving just more options, so that way you might go to Amazon not just to watch the video of the night, but even get your news reports.
Bridget, I'm hoping you saw this. I think anybody in the tech world is probably aware of this. Time magazine just did a piece on the 50 most important gadgets of all time. Are you privy to this? Did you read the article?
A little bit. All right. A little bit, yeah.
I'll give you what the top three are. I'm just curious if you agree or disagree. They said the third, and they do a really good job of explaining why each of the 50 is where they put them. But the third most important gadget of all time, according to Time magazine, is the Apple Macintosh computer. Number two is the Sony Trinitron television. And the number one and most important gadget ever is the Apple iPhone. Agree or disagree with those three?
Well, everyone talks about the iPhone, how it changed everything. I mean, we had touchscreen phones. I'm going to say agree, because we had touchscreen phones before the iPhone. But it took until the third iPhone for everyone to realize, oh, this is different. This is something that others don't have in terms of how Apple made the whole ecosystem and how Apple kind of created the whole App Store to just be simple to use. Because before, when we had touchscreen phones, they were a little junky and full of bloatware, and sometimes they were kind of, you know, they worked and they didn't work. And I personally didn't even want an iPhone when it first came out because it didn't have basic things. It was 2G internet speed. It didn't have copy and paste like my LG phone did. So, you know, although it might not have like been right out the gate the strongest phone, it certainly, you know, made everyone think differently about It made everyone think differently about smartphones.
But you know, even I went out on Mother's Day with my mother-in-law, and at dinner she announced. She pulls out of her purse. She says, "Guess what I got?" She's from Mississippi. I'm not just making up a voice. And we're like, "What, Annette? What did you get?" She goes, "I got an iPhone."
Oh.
She goes, "I don't know how to work it yet, but Sheila, her daughter, is going to come over tonight and explain it to me."
Oh.
But that's huge because, you know, a lot of people who aren't computer savvy can really figure out the iPhone with ease.
Yeah, my parents are both on iPhones now, but they're not into apps unless it's like an easy game to play. At the same time, though, they love the fact that we can do FaceTime with each other because they're in Florida, I'm in New York, I don't get to see them, and because of how easy it is to use like video chatting with FaceTime and other things, it's very intuitive in that way.
Yeah, and you know, with them going to be grandparents, they of course have to have FaceTime. Bridget Carey expecting a baby, and that'll be fun.
Yes,
you'll use that a lot.
Yeah, I hope so.
Time magazine ranked your baby as the 35th most important gadget of our lifetime, by the way, Bridget. I think it should have been higher.
No pressure there.
Nope, none.
All right, we have time for one more big thing in the tech news. What would you like to tell us, Bridget?
Well, I would say, speaking of all this video talk, Periscope, that's like Twitter's live broadcasting app where you can just take your phone and live broadcast video to the world. They're making some changes, and they announced that they're going to make their videos stay alive forever by default unless you choose to delete it. And the big deal here is that you probably have come across a few Facebook Live videos already. Facebook and Twitter are kind of facing off in this sense of like being the one place you go to, hey, I want to broadcast something live right now on video to everyone. Which platform do I use? Do I go to Twitter's Periscope? Do I go to Facebook? And now they're both going to keep their videos alive without deleting because Periscope used to just erase from existence after a day. And that's going to be important for even professionals, news outlets. You know, if you're at a live event and you want to document something, or if you're a witness to something, you know, are you going to pull one of these out and just start streaming it for the world to see and not worry about it disappearing? So I think it's going to be a neat tool going forward.
Periscope is really good. As I mentioned, that boxing match, the Mayweather-Floyd fight, we didn't want to pay the money, so we went on Periscope, and some dudes were just holding their phone up to the TV doing shots between rounds, and then the picture was sideways at the end of the fight. But Periscope, I didn't even think about about it in the whole news sense of the word world. If something's breaking, we've been using it here at WGN as well. I know Kristen Decker will go out and shoot stuff. It's the way to really be connected instantly instead of having the camera crew get there.
If you want to try something really cool, go on Periscope tonight, right about when you're about to go to bed, and there's a globe, and you can just see little blips on a globe anywhere in the world on where someone is streaming live. And I was able to jump into other countries where it was in the middle of the day. I saw a sunset in Hawaii. You could just go anywhere. Sometimes if I'm like, if I wish I was at Disney World, I could just jump into Florida and go, oh, hey, who's streaming now from the ride?
Is that cool?
You can just be anywhere with the way they set it up, or, you know, jump into something that's going on that you may not understand. One time there was a protest going on, and the people were speaking English and other languages too, so you find it's very multicultural and really eye-opening.
Awesome. I'm going to do that. Periscope, check it out, and look at the globe and pick on different various spots around the world. Thanks for the tip. She's Bridget Carey, a CNET senior editor and host of the CNET Update. What is coming up on the CNET Update if we go to CNET.com?
Well, aside from some of the stories we talked about right now, we're also talking about how you could play Nintendo games in virtual reality. So someone figured out how to take old Virtual Boy games from 1995, which was a failed device, and put it in today's VR headsets if you have an Android phone. So fun things to tinker with there.
Great. Thank you so much. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Bridget. A quick break, then the news. Steve will give you the news. And then...
Did your tongue just stop?
My tongue stopped working.
Fix-A-Flat.
Just gave up. Spray some Fix-A-Flat on me. And then a world record holder will be joining us. And we'll explain more in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Bill, I don't know what's wrong with us, but we like to have people who have broken the Guinness Book of World Records on this show.
Sure, why not?
This should be a showcase for all Guinness record holders.
That's right.
And a local guy, I have to be honest with you, when I read what you did, Nick Janowitz, I thought, who can't burp? I didn't really know what a burpee was. Why don't you explain? Nick Janowitz is here. You're a retired mixed martial artist, owner of Patriot Sports and Fitness in Elmhurst, and you have broken a record for the most amount of burpees, and that isn't like a burp sound.
No, but if that was a category, maybe I could do that as well. So a burpee is probably one of the most hated fitness exercises out there. It involves, you know, your legs, your core, your upper body, and it's also a very it's cardio as well. So it's not only a strength exercise but a cardio exercise. And
is it like the old squat thrust?
It's very similar to that. Yeah. So you stand in a standing position, you squat, you put your hands on the ground, kick your feet back, then kick your feet back up again, and jump in the air.
And how many of those did you do in 24 hours?
Well, the people counting for me they said it was 10,164, but I think they missed a couple in there.
Of course you do. But
you weren't counting along just
well,
to make sure.
I got mad at him a couple times. I'm like, that was 10. And he's like, no, that was 9. I said, that was 10, but I'll do 11.
Nick, you just described the burpee as one of the most hated. It is the most hated. I know any time our gym coaches would tell us we had to do 20 or 25, we would groan and complain. But you did over 10,000 of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I stress it to like everybody, especially the people that come through my gym, that it's just mental. Half of this stuff is, you know, probably 90% of it is mental. And I just got sick and tired of hearing people, oh, I can't do a burpee, I got a bad knee or a bad back. And I'm like, I've had multiple knee surgeries, a hip replacement, and I'm still doing them, so let's go, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate you. I was just going to use that I've had a knee replacement and need another one.
You won't use it at my place.
All right. Well, the place is Patriot Sports and Fitness. And here's what happened. A bunch of people watched you do this 24 hours. Now, how do they allow for breaks? That's what I never get with the Guinness Book of World Records.
So, it's just a revolving clock, you know, that just keeps going. So, I was kind of averaging in the beginning about 20 a minute. And then, you know, I would take like 20, 30 second break. And that's what I was trying to keep my breaks to. Mm-hmm. And then, around noon, I took about like a half an hour break. I talked to a reporter and stuff like that. But, you know, I tried not to take any more than longer than a 2 minute break. That was like probably the longest breaks I would take, just because you cramped up so bad and you had people sure. there like massaging the knots out of you and stuff like that. But
what was the record prior to this?
It was 10,100. So,
oh, so you just made it.
Well, I actually stopped about 6 hours ahead of the 24 hours. So there were so many people there, and after I broke it, that everybody looked like they wanted a party. So I did it in about 18 hours. And it really wasn't about, like, you know, it was just a mental thing just to prove to everybody and, you know, help raise some money for, you know, a couple of good causes. And that was the, you know, the gist of it. So,
yeah.
All right, so there were some raffles and stuff. Any causes that you want to mention that benefit from it?
My friends over at One for the Kids, I visited their website, onefortthekids.org. They're a phenomenal charity, a local Chicagoland charity that raises money for, you know, kids in need and their families as well. And what's great about this charity is that their money is directly impacted. You can see it through their cocktail party every year. I mean, they literally raise $100,000 in one night. You know, for a family. And some of the stories are horrible. And Love Your Melon is one, it's actually a national organization, but it's a phenomenal organization that raises money for kids with cancer, but it's started by a bunch of college students. So it's really a bunch of college students that's doing it. And four of those students work for me, and they're doing great things over at College DuPage with it. And basically, they pretty much just sell hats to give and raise money for, you know, kids battling cancer. And it's just an unbelievable thing for, you know, college kids to be doing. While most of them are out there drinking beers and, you know, having beer bongs, they're, you know, trying to raise money for, you know, a bunch of kids battling cancer.
I was really good at beer bongs.
Oh, I did a couple this past weekend over at the Derby.
All right, so you work out and you're very healthy and you're in fantastic shape, but you also have time to go party too, evidently.
Well, you know, you play hard, you work hard, and then party hard.
It all balances out.
Yeah, it balances out.
Sure it does. Prior to this, I don't know what sort of training goes into this. Were you building up? Were you building up a tolerance to these or what?
You know what? I did like a couple of like days. I literally decided it about a month prior. So I really didn't train that much. I did. I mean, I'm always in decent shape and I've been wrestling my entire life. So a burpee to me is just sprawling. Yeah. So I've been sprawling my entire life, and that's a lot harder when somebody's trying to take you down. So I looked at the burpee. I just saw the record. I'm like, I went out. I went onto the wrestling mat at the gym and I did a couple hundred and I go, oh, I can easily do this. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of what happened. And then, I did a test run, a week prior where I did 3,000 of them and just to make sure, you know, my hip wasn't going to fall out of the socket. But,
that was it.
You know, because it defeated the purpose of it. Like I kept telling people been doing stuff like this my entire life.
Yeah.
And it's just a way to mentally test myself, you know. Everybody has that little internal dialogue inside them, and you know, everybody has a breaking point. And if you're not testing that breaking point, you know,
you'll just set yourself
up for failure.
Right?
Yeah.
Nick Janowitz of Elmhurst, 10,160 burpees on May
2nd. 64.
Oh. 10,164.
Yeah.
You got to get that four in there.
Hey, everything matters. Now, this was videotaped, I'm sure. So now this has been sent to the Guinness people.
Yep.
You did it on May 2nd. It's not 100% official yet. They have to get back to you on this, right?
They literally go through every burpee. So,
They're watching the videotape. They're stopping it. They're fast forwarding it. They're slowing it down. They want to count and make sure the count is correct.
Yeah, I know the guy that the American that held it previously before Lee Ryan, who's out in the UK. I think he's from Dubai. Who holds it now, did hold it. But the guy that before him, they took three away. Who is Cameron Dorn, who's an ultra marathon runner and athlete. And
what were they too sloppy?
I guess so. He said everyone was perfect. I don't know. So your feet have to go back a certain amount. So you have two lines, and the distance that your feet have to travel are half the distance of your body. So since I'm, you know, 69 inches, which is only 5'9", you know, I'd like to say I'm 5'10 or 11, but it probably helps me being only 5'9".
Right.
I had to go back 34 and a half inches. So I made my line at 35. That way there's no discrepancy.
Smart move.
Yeah.
So. Very smart move.
All right. And so you own Patriot Sports and Fitness, and that's out in Elmhurst. You can go to patriotsportsandfitness.com.
Correct.
I have a question for you, and it's going to get you mad, but you did 10,164 burpees. The old record was 10,100. Why didn't you go a little farther?
It wasn't really about that. I mean, if somebody breaks it again, I guess I could go back out and just set a new mark. It was The reason why I did it is to test myself and, you know, raise some money along the way for those two charities. And when everybody was there after I broke it, they just wanted all, you know, hang out and high five and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, so it really wasn't about that. If, you know, it was just a test, you know, to myself that I knew I could do it. And
you could do it again if you
wanted
to.
Yeah, and if I wanted to, I got some other ones, you know, down the road that I plan on breaking. But, you know, I'm sure my, you know, two of my kids that were doing them along with me, Phil Marino or Johnny or Jeremy Miller and Matt Slonoff, they're going to probably break it one day anyway. So, you know.
The guy whose record you broke, this Ryan guy, Lee
Ryan.
Yeah,
Lee Ryan. I mean,
is he mad at you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
bet he is.
Oh, he should get used to being in second, you know.
But now, because you only beat him by not that many, if I'm Lee Ryan on Saturday, I break your record.
I think once you've done it before, it's not something you really want to do again.
Really?
So I'm not. It'll get broken. Things get broken, and that's just how the world works, you know. Records were made to be broken.
Yeah,
and now I just got to move on to another one. You know, if somebody breaks it, good for them. And hopefully they raise a lot of money along the way.
When it's official and people can go get the Guinness Book of World Records, can they bring it to Patriot Sports and Fitness, and will you autograph it?
Oh, of course I will. Of course I will.
I want to break the record for Slurpees, so my entry will be right next to yours. It'll be Slurpees and Burpees right next to each other.
That's actually
in the Guinness Book of World Records.
That's a sign in our gym when he said that. I think somebody made a sign like that when I was doing it. It was like, burpees? I thought he said Slurpees.
The two of you could be a tag team.
I know.
Travel
I'm
the
in
world
on that.
Over.
Oh, man. We'd do great.
Right? What was the sorest part of you the next day? Quads?
My what? Hands. I thought I actually broke my knuckle doing it. My hands were, I'm so swollen and just, you know, pretty much a lot of the skin came off. They're healing pretty good now, but it looked like I got in a bare knuckle brawl with, you know,
that
a
bad?
With a steel post or something.
Can you stick around for a little bit?
Oh, of course.
Nick Janowitz is here. He's a Guinness Book of World Record holder, or he's about to be. He did 10,164 burpees. We'll talk to him a little bit more next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We're talking to soon-to-be Guinness Book of World Record holder Nick Janowitz of Elmhurst. He did 10,164 burpees on May 2nd to break the world record for most burpees done in 24 hours. But you only did it in what, 18 hours, 17?
Yeah, I think over 18.
Oh, yeah, man.
About 5 minutes over.
You don't seem impressed by your own feat here.
Oh, it's...
You don't think that's been impressive?
Go tell my wife that.
Yeah? Well, you're pretty impressed? Now, you said a little while ago that you like to challenge yourself and you may try to break some other record. Do you have your eyes on one particular record that you would like to break after this?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of push-up and pull-up ones out there. I'm trying to get them. See, the burpees I always do that we do at Patriot is, you know, chest to ground burpees. The Guinness doesn't have that as a category, so hopefully they make that one as a category, which is a harder type of burpee. And I'd like to do that, or, you know, most push-ups or pull-ups. But last I checked, they had on their website, they're kind of getting away from push-ups because they're saying it's too hard to determine whether the guy went up all the way.
Oh, really?
Well, they're doing 40,000, you know, push-ups in a day. So they have, like, some different ones, like the back of your hands or knuckle push-ups or finger push-ups.
I do the clapping ones. You do the clapping ones? I like those.
I do 360 push-ups.
Here's where they're all throwing down now. Kevin works out all the time, too. How come you're not throwing down with them? How many, you know, clapping push-ups can you do?
Enough.
All right.
He looks fit. He looks
tough. He is fit. All right. Say, you said your wife wasn't really that proud of you.
No, Tracy,
are proud of him, aren't you? This is Nick's wife, Tracy, on the line.
Hi, Nick. While you're taking in all the glory, I'm doing all the work back here. How are
you? Here she is to steal my thunder.
Yeah, that's what wives do.
She's the best, though.
I'm his lightning to his thunder, and gosh darn it, I'm going to make sure I get on with you this morning.
Did he brag a lot when this was all over? Was he thrilled with himself, Tracy?
You guys really don't know Nick. If you knew him a little bit better, you knew this is Nick's day-to-day conversation here. But, actually, I'd say I pulled out the burpee card more than Nick has this past week. I'm so proud of him, but you know what? It doesn't surprise me. That's just the kind of guy Nick is. He's a Navy guy. He's one of the strongest, mentally toughest people I know, so I'm very proud of him.
And are you working on any record-breaking of your own, Tracy?
Well, actually, for myself, it might not seem as big now that you got Nick there, but one of my personal goals for this year is to do my very first Ironman. So I'm doing a half Ironman in July. So that, to me, is very mentally, physically challenging for myself. So I'll be doing that in July.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
That's very big.
It's very big.
So I'm excited to do that.
Look at that family. Do you guys have kids? Are they really active too?
Oh, my kids are nuts.
They sure are.
There's one speed fast with those two.
Really?
But yeah, we have a beautiful 6-year-old daughter who turned 6 yesterday, Kyla. And then the little Bam Bam is Nicholas, who will be 3 in a couple of weeks. And this kid is, wow.
Why didn't you just name him Bam Bam? Wouldn't that have been more adorable?
That's all I do call him.
So, Tracy, you're over keeping the Patriots sports and fitness going right now in Elmhurst right this second, right?
You got it. Yeah, we're here listening to you this morning here. And I heard we could call in, and I said, it takes a village to raise a world record holder. I'm calling in. He's giving more credit. He's giving out a little more credit. But no, that's what we do. It's a family affair. Our kids come to work with us. Our dogs come to work with us. I mean, we have a ton of fun here in the gym. It doesn't even feel like work. So excited that he got to go downtown and meet with you guys and be there with you this morning.
Nice to meet you. Wish we could have in person, Tracy. Thank you for calling.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have fun, Nick. See you soon.
All right. Bye, honey.
Bye, Tracy. I picture your dogs being very muscular for some weird reason. Do they work out a little bit?
The one dog looks muscular, but not to change the mood here, but he's just about 14, and it's this is kind of the last days. But we just got a new puppy who we call PJ for my dog's Peyton after Walter Peyton. And we got a new one, PJ, who is
Peyton Jr.,
and she's just the sweetest little dog you could ever. They're like the little staples of the gym. They're there to greet everybody and just, you know.
Bill's out. He's not a dog lover.
He's not a dog guy, but everybody in your family just seems to have this drive. Yeah. I can't imagine it not carrying over to your pets as well.
Patriot Sports and Fitness, pluralsports.com.
Yep.
Awesome. It was so nice to meet you. We're going to get a little video of you doing some burpees that we'll put up on our Facebook page and at WGNradio.com. I don't know, Kev, Bill, do you want to go head-to-head with him?
No, he's a world record holder.
Kevin's just shrugging his shoulders like, yeah, maybe I'll try a few.
I haven't done a burpee in years, but sure, let's do it.
He better not show me up.
Well, we'll do a little of that video and put it up on WGNradio.com. Continued success to you, and let us know when you're officially in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh, I will. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, Nick. Great to meet you. We'll take a quick break. Kim's got the news next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Did you see how winded Kevin is, our producer? He's all winded.
I feel good.
Listen, Kevin took the extra. We made a video, and it'll be up later on WGNRadio.com and our Facebook page. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Nick Janowitz was here. Mixed martial artist. It says retired, but I don't
think he's retired.
Maybe from competitions, but
right.
He still does
he's
it.
He's too young to retire.
He owns Patriot Sports and Fitness in Elmhurst, and he's holding the world record in burpees as soon as Guinness checks him off.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin went to do some burpees, and you actually had more follow-through than Nick did because you put your hands up at the top. He didn't say you had to do that.
Yeah, I didn't know the proper form, but he was wicked fast.
Well, it was pretty fast.
He hit 10 before as Kevin was getting to 7, and you go, well, that's only off by 3. But, yeah, he had it down. But Kevin did that extra step of lifting the arms way over the head.
I also skipped the push-up motion in one of them, so that probably
saved
me. Oh,
yeah, there was that.
You know, everybody has their own personal best. When Bill and I tried to do push-ups in the studio, I did 1.5.
Right.
And how many did you do?
30. But
we all
but it was
have
windy
our personal goals.
Right. That's true.
I'm telling you, I
give Kevin credit. I wouldn't, Nick broke the world record.
I know.
I wouldn't go against the guy who broke a world record.
Because you know you can't do as many as he can.
It's impossible.
Because it's so funny to watch what's clicking in your head because you are such a sweet, wonderful, polite, well-mannered
nice
man.
Thank you.
Until competition enters into it.
I know.
And
something
then
happens to me. I don't understand what it is.
You still don't swear as much as I do, but I've seen your temper.
I get this thing, and I don't know what it is. It's
called
like
crazy.
I think it is. It is a form of craziness. I enjoy winning way, way, way more than losing,
well,
and
we
whatever
all
it
do.
Is.
But
yeah, but I take it to an extreme, and
oh,
I don't know.
I
don't know why that is. I should understand that winning isn't that important. I just like it a lot more than losing.
Well, it's more fun to win.
It's a lot more fun to win.
But watching his face, it's like when I said, hey, do either of you want to go head-to-head with Nick? I could see your thought bubble going, I kind of want to. No, he's
not
got a record.
The best.
He's, yeah. I can't do it.
I would go up against like his mom or something, or his grandmother if she was around. I would go up against her, but he just broke the world record, and that's not that. Why would that be fun?
You think I could take him?
Maybe.
There's not a chance ever.
Nick brought some really good swag from their Patriots Sports and Fitness Health Club.
Yeah,
and. You got a t-shirt, I got a little sweatshirt, and there was a hat that says feed your melon or love your melon or something. Mm-hmm. And I told Kevin, you know, we each will get something now. And I said, you know, put it on your head. And he just put it on just a little bit. And he said he doesn't want to mess the do.
Right.
What's happened to boys of today?
I don't know.
Wendy, it takes a lot of preparation.
What, taking a shower and towel drying it? Do you use a lot of product?
I use some product. I have to look at it for a little while, a good 5 minutes.
From all angles.
From all angles, yeah. Multiple mirrors.
Right.
Wow.
I get that. I understand that.
When did boys change? Because my boys are like that, too, where they're particular about what they're wearing. When you were growing up, didn't you kind of just grab what was clean? And did you have... Oh, you are the guy who bought turquoise Chuck Taylor high tops.
Yeah. I was...
And never wore them.
You know when it affected me, like, during the cold weather months, and in Chicago, that means 10 out of the 12.
Yeah.
For some reason, I had it in my head, no matter how cold it was, I was not going to wear a parka, because that's what everybody was wearing, and I just went, they look...
Those old survival
flattering.
Jackets?
Yeah,
like with the fur?
The big, yeah.
They were either like a army green or some, if I had a navy blue one, and it had like a fur around the hood, and then it had pencil holders on the sleeve.
Pencil holders made, that was a nice touch.
I was very excited.
My parents bought me one, and I don't know what the color said on the tag, but I called it murk, because it was the color of like murky green.
Yeah, like a grayish, bluish, greenish.
Like if you look outside,
yes,
this is a form of the color of that parka. It's murky. You know, it's not a pretty color in nature, but they got that for me once.
Because it was popular.
I just refused to wear it, and I would sometimes go to school in very cold weather just without a jacket because I hated it that much.
See?
And that was, like, in retrospect, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, but my son Dylan does that, my younger one. He's been wearing shorts since, I think January 1st he
Has
turned
he
into
really?
Shorts and
At
a
school?
Hoodie. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, wear the winter coat. And he sometimes would wear it with the shorts.
Yeah.
But it's mainly just a hoodie and shorts. It's like kids, and I see kids walking home from school that the
that
mom.
That are not dressed appropriately.
Yes, and I want to pull up and go, doesn't your mother dress you?
No.
And then I realized it doesn't matter what
it
mom says.
No, you can't do that.
They're going to do whatever they want.
Sure.
So Kevin's the same way.
Sure. But girls are smarter in that they know you want to look good, but you also have to dress for whatever the weather dictates. But I think guys, and I threw myself into that, it doesn't apply to us for some reason.
Yeah, but when I was younger, I went for looks and not for warmth.
Yeah, right.
Now it's like, you know, I'm all babushkaed up when I walk down the street. I don't care how I look. Jack, why do some people just like to win to the point where it just takes control of them?
Well, I think it's because we love to gloat.
Bill doesn't gloat too
much. It's not gloating
much.
For me. It's not gloating
well, okay.
for me.
Okay, so I have a good friend who must win. And it isn't gloating for him so much, but he is so competitive. I don't know anybody more competitive than him. But for fun, the definition of gloat, contemplate or dwell on one's own success or another's misfortune.
All right, you gloat, Bill.
Smugness or malignant pleasure. That's what I think is funny.
You want to see yourself kick ass or someone else fail miserably?
Well, think of the Cubs.
Oh, God.
What about them?
Aren't they having a ton of fun? And
yes.
Isn't it fun to see them have fun?
Yes, and that's the thing that people who are educators fail to teach, and that is, it is so much more fun to win than lose. It's not even close.
Not even close. And as much as we like to think that we don't gloat or we're not smug about it. We are. I think we are.
I guess to some extent.
It's a lot more fun to be a little smug than to be stepped on.
Right. It
All
is.
Right, Jack, we got to run, but thank you for checking in.
You bet. See you.
Thanks, Jack.
Sorry I had to cut him off. He's going to be mad at me now.
No, he's not. He'll be
wish
fine.
He's going to malignancy on
no,
me.
No, he would not do that. He would never do that. All right, a quick break, and then I want to share something with you from Time Magazine. We talked about this with Bridget Carey a little earlier, the 50 most important gadgets of all time. Just a little something about that coming up next. Bill and Mundy, WGN.
I love to mess you up. Last night I watched Jesus Christ Superstar with my sons, and then we on Amazon Prime wanted to see a little trailer of Hair.
The movie Hair with Treat Williams and Beverly D'Angelo.
Who looks, my sons pointed out, Beverly D'Angelo in a young phase, especially during the Hair musical, looks very much like Amy Poehler.
Yeah, she does kind of, I guess,
and
a little bit.
And I just showed a picture of a young Beverly D'Angelo while you were reading.
Right.
And she has no, she's flashing herself.
She's flashing. Thank you for showing me that.
That nice was... control.
Well, sure. I'm a professional. You know that. Earlier, Bridget Carey was on, and it is Tech Tuesday, so we were discussing this article that's in Time Magazine, and it's great. And what they've done is they've taken the 50, what they consider to be the 50 most important gadgets of all time, and they've ranked them 50th to first.
And I'm sure Laserdisc is nowhere on there.
Laserdisc did not make the top 50.
And I'm sure 8-Track is not on there.
No, also not on there. You know what's not on here, though, that should definitely be on here, and there's not a single mention? And I think it shows, like, as I was reasoning this to myself, is how'd you leave that off of your list of the most important gadgets? It shows how much technology we've had thrown at us in our lifetime, because the microwave oven, which is an incredibly important gadget and has changed the way pretty much all of us eat, that's not on here. It's nowhere
well,
to be found.
Well, that's an appliance.
I would put it somewhere. I think it could be both. Wouldn't that be? That's
no.
not a gadget, a microwave oven?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Because the Sony Trinitron, I don't know what Sony did that was so amazing. I mean, just like colored TV should be on there,
yeah,
as opposed to the Sony brand, which is what, number two, Sony Trinitron?
The Sony Trinitron was number two,
like,
yes.
What was the specs on that made it so ahead of just your average color TV?
It says, out of all the televisions, Sony Trinitron, which was launched in 1968 as color TV sales were finally taking off, and even that in and of itself is hard to imagine, but there was a time where they were selling black and white televisions. They couldn't keep them in stock, but color people were a little leery of. I don't know.
Why?
Is this going to work? I don't know. It's just too new for people, and it was a lot more expensive. It stands at the forefront of memorable television sets, in part for its novel way of merging what at that point had been three separate electron guns. The Trinitron was the first TV receiver to win a vaunted Emmy Award,
really?
And then over the next quarter century went on to sell over 100 million units worldwide. That's a lot of TV sets, the Sony Trinitron. And then you look at it today, and it looks like it's from 1,000 years ago.
That is so weird.
Even though it was so groundbreaking, you look at it. But the one that stands out the most for me, and I think it was number 11? Yeah, number 11. This is the Canon Pocketronic Calculator, which is huge. It's a calculator, but it's the first one I ever remember seeing. And it sold for, this is in 1970, it sold for $345, and it's gigantic. I mean, now you could get a calculator for a dollar. There's places where you get those
at the dollar store.
They're a dollar for a calculator. This calculator, which did a fraction of what today's calculators do.
How big was it? Like this, like maybe
it was
like an 8x8 pan, like the size of this phone?
Just a little smaller than what you described. It was bigger than your hand.
Yeah.
There used to be at Marshall Fields, that's the first place I ever saw one. There was, in every Marshall Fields that we went to, the one that I remember most was River Oaks. There was this one on the ground floor always. They had this, it was gadgets and things of the future. Like they always had, I don't know if anyone will remember this but me, but this used to fascinate me. It was a box that looked like there was a penny on top. But it wasn't. It was a projection of the penny underneath.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
So you'd
about.
Go to reach for
it. Was
for
a hologram
it.
Kind
it was
of
the first
thing.
Hologram.
Yeah, yeah. I do remember
it.
I
so
didn't
you'd
reach
for
it.
It wasn't there. My brother and I would do that for 45 minutes. My mom would drop us off at that counter, and we would just for 45 minutes try to grab the penny that wasn't there.
That was the mall babysitting. Here, let's put the kids by the holographic penny.
But then finally, they had calculators. This was 1970. And again, we would play with it and play with it, and we couldn't believe what it would do. You know, we would just put in different, how about 35 times 10? 350? How does it do it?
It was pretty cool. And then you'd do like the hello upside down and the shell oil.
Right. Right. And the first one we bought was just over $100. The first one my parents bought was like $112.
I
and
like
people
the ones
come
with
over
the...
and just stare at it.
Like, did you let them touch
the future.
It?
No. No.
I like the ones with the paper, like the adding machine. That was, I don't know what it is with kids, and I don't know if you did it. I'm sure a lot of listeners have, but you used to play like, you know, restaurant owner or waitress.
Sure.
And you would go around, somebody would get you a little menu book, and you'd go around and bug everybody and go, what do you want? And they'd go, for what?
Right.
What do you mean, what do I want? To eat, what do you want? There's nothing in the house. Just pick something. And then you'd go take the calculator.
Right.
And if you had it, if you were lucky enough to have it with the paper, you would ring it all up and then present them with a bill.
That's
and they'd
right.
give you no money, and it was really nice pretending.
That's right. Ours was, our fake restaurant was so authentic that we would use the calculator to realize how much money we were losing and schedule a fire in the kitchen. All right, let's take a quick break. Read it, by the way, seriously.
We
go
should
to
talk
time.
About it later because there's a lot of people who want to jump in on technology. We have a doubleheader today.
All right, let's do that. All right, we'll talk about this in the second half. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. It's our second show of the day.
Doubleheader.
It's a doubleheader.
No rain delay here.
And it's not one of those day-night doubleheaders. Who has time for that?
You have a retractable roof. Isn't that what the construction is they're doing down there?
Yes. Yes, it is. We're going to have a retractable roof. Speaking of baseball, I know what a White Sox fan you are, Wendy. Did you watch any of the White Sox and Texas Rangers game last night?
I watched a second or three of it.
All right. Tell me if you saw this. The Texas Rangers have a second baseman. He's from Venezuela, I believe. His first name is kind of a strange first name. It's Rouned, R-O-U-G-N-E-D, Rouned. I don't know what that means. But his last name is spelled, it's not pronounced this way, but it's spelled O-D-O-R.
Odor.
It's pronounced Odor.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I bet he was teased every once in a while as a child. Odor.
Is this what you think about?
I'm watching the game and I felt bad for this guy. I'm like, I hope this guy gets something good because all through life, wherever he went, people were probably ripping on the fact that his name is spelled but not pronounced O-D-O-R, Odor. That's a strange name. Wouldn't you have changed it at some point?
You don't change your name.
I would have changed my, if your name was Odor, you wouldn't have changed it? I would have.
There's a lot of people who have crazy names who now enjoy introducing themselves and saying their names.
Yeah, I bet.
I don't want to mention them on the air because if listeners have these last names, but there are people that we've had as guests that you and I will say, wow, wouldn't you have changed that?
Yes, sure. Sure.
Leff, for instance.
Well, that is shortened, you know. It was.
Oh, that's true.
When my great-grandfather came over from Russia, he shortened it. It was still left, but it was with six F's instead of two. Isn't that a ridiculous amount of F's consecutively? I don't know why they would have named him that, but he changed it to just two F's.
You want a couple extra.
Yeah, because at some point you need an extra F. I don't know why, but...
He put the F in left.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
The F's
but,
in left.
But I never came across anybody named... Again, it's pronounced Odor... But even the announcers didn't say anything about it during the game because I would have pointed out it's spelled Odor, but it's not. It's Odor.
Good thing you're not doing a play-by-play or color. Because really, you would point that out?
Yeah, well, I guess it's so self-evident. Like even before they said it, I saw him playing in the field and I stopped it and I went, it looks like his name is O-D-O-R, but that can't be. But it is. Rouned Odor, but spelled Odor.
Thanks for pointing that out.
You're welcome. I've got a baseball analysis show on ESPN now.
I'd listen to it.
I just have players on with funny names, and I pointed out to them.
Is entertaining.
We got Rusty Kuntz coming on next week. Former White Sox player.
You got to have a couple of people guest host with you namely Dick Johnson and Pete Sayak.
I'd love to have them on with me.
Those, for instance, are a couple of names. And your name's Richard. Can't you decide, do you go by Rich, Rick?
You got a lot of options when your name is Richard. You do.
I mean,
some of them more acceptable culturally than others.
Thankfully, not everyone acts like 12-year-old boys like we do.
Right. Pete LeCocq, first baseman for the
Cubs
for a while. That was his name. I thought he was a great player. He's the son of Peter Marshall. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
That's where the Pete came from.
Yeah. Peter Marshall is his dad.
Who's dad?
I can do it once without laughing. I can't do it more than once.
NASCAR great.
Dick Trickle.
Yep.
Yeah, Dick Trickle. That's an interesting name.
That fine goes to Leff, L-E-F-F-F-F-F-F-F-F.
And you should see a urologist if your name is Dick Trickle, I would think. Make sure everything's in order. Make sure everything's the way it should be.
Hey, Sue.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome
Love
to our.
You guys.
Thank you. Welcome to our 12-year-old radio show.
No joke. No joke. Hey, you know what occurred to me is that you were talking about this fella by the name of O-D-O-R.
Yeah.
Suspecting that he got ripped on as a child because his name is Odor.
Mm-hmm.
But if he grew up in...
Oh, she had to edit herself.
Oh, man.
Sue, back to you.
You dropped away for a second, Sue. What were you saying?
But if he grew up in Venezuela, my guess is he was called Odor or whatever, and they had no idea that O-D-O-R in English meant a nasty smell.
I'm positive that that's what happened, but then I was thinking in my head, but then at some point, you know, he got drafted by the Rangers and he came over to the United States. That must have been a weird rude awakening for him when people explained, people are going to think your name is funny.
Well, more importantly, I think the 12-year-old in you came out. So,
right.
As it does every day.
It does every day.
I know. I listen.
Oh, do we lose her?
She listens every day. Oh. Sue, are you back in action?
There you are.
I'm here. I don't know what's going on. Okay, guys. Love your show.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
All righty. Bye-bye.
And, you know, odor... is it always a bad thing? I know aroma is probably the better way to say.
If it's a pleasant smell, you say aroma, but if it's a negative, you say odor, right? Because odor never, if you hear the word
odor. What's that odor?
Right, that then it implies that it's something negative. But if you go, what's that aroma? You go, well, that's cookies.
I guess,
smell cookies.
Or perfume.
Right.
I wasn't going food.
But you know what I mean. One
yeah,
is a much
I
more
guess.
Positive spin than the other. But
all
for
right.
a baseball player to have that name, what smells bad? The second baseman. It's just natural. You go, oh, that's not nice. He's doing his best. He's trying to get a ground ball, and you're ripping on him.
You know, earlier in the show, in part one, we were talking about what to do and what not to do in case of a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
And on the heels of what was going on in Oklahoma last night, and where was the other location that had a tornado? Hate to put you on the spot,
the
but I know there was...
The clips I saw were all Oklahoma-based, but I know there were other tornadoes around the area.
We had put out some misinformation because the rules have changed over the course of several years. So tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk to Tom Skilling and find out everything we need to know about what you should do if you're on a rural road in a car. Don't go under an underpass.
Right.
By the way, sorry, I got a note from Kevin Powell about Odor.
Yes.
Apparently his brother has the exact same name, first and last.
His brother has the same first name and the same last name.
Yeah, exact name. That would get confusing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That's the George Foreman theory of naming kids.
Yeah.
Because all of his kids' names are George, right?
Yeah, I think daughter, too. Kevin Powell from the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantes.
It runs in their family. Rugnid Roberto Odor and Rugnid Odor. That's how you could tell them apart by the middle name, Roberto. One of them has that as the middle name. They also have an uncle named Ruglis Odor who has sons Ruglis Odor and Ruglis Odor and Roberto Odor.
Now, they know there are other options. In,
like Body.
I believe
Odor.
So.
Body Odor.
All right, I'm the 12-year-old boy now. You knew it would rub off
sure,
eventually.
Sure, of course, it'd have to.
So they don't stray too far when it comes to naming.
But when you saw that name for the first time, Kevin, didn't you do as I did, go, well, that's a misprint. You wouldn't have a guy named, like, essentially Odor.
Right. I immediately went to, there's a website called Name Engine that'll break down all the difficult sports names out there.
Oh.
So that's where I had it. But yes, definitely a strange name. And again, these are... Rugless Odor, Rugless Odor, Rugless Odor, and Roberto Odor. Those are also family members.
If you're in love with a name,
why would you be in love with that name?
I don't know why you'd be in love with that name, but.
And I don't get the whole thing, because if you do have, they have different middle names, as you said, Kevin. So.
The two Rugneds have one of them.
Now that sounds negative itself. You go, hey, a couple of Rugneds.
This is getting difficult. One of the Rugneds has a middle name. The other does not.
No middle name?
Wendy,
he was robbed.
But it's a poor country.
You can afford a middle name.
I don't know that they could. Venezuela in the 1980s, it was a very tough time.
Yes.
And, my wife's family, you know, there's six kids in my wife's family. Four of them are girls, and they all have the same middle name. It's Anne, all of them. And their parents were creative people, and I don't want to start trouble, but I go, you could, you know, there's other names and stuff, and they didn't understand that. They go, no,
like Rugned.
Anne. Rugned. I would love, if Terry's middle name was Rugned, that'd be great.
She can still change it.
Maybe.
It's just a legal document.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So,
well,
just
thank you, Kevin. I figured I'd share that tidbit with you guys, with the Odor family clan.
Sure.
There you go.
We appreciate that. All right, we have to take a break, and then a lot more of this sort of behavior. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's WGN. If you want to jump in, you can at 312-981-7200. That's how you can call us. That's how you can text us.
And a bunch of texts here. We were talking about Augustus Gloob.
Rugned Odor. He is the second baseman. He's an infielder for the Texas Rangers.
Kevin did not say it like Rugned. He said Rugula or something.
Now I'm going to show you the pronunciation that they use, and you try to pronounce that. Go ahead. Mr. Odor to you and me. His last name is spelled O-D-O-R, but it's pronounced Odor. He's from Venezuela.
Now, here come a bunch of people that I don't believe. For some reason, Carl, I don't believe you.
Okay, you don't have to believe me. You just have to listen to the story.
All righty.
Okay, Grandpa was coming in from France, went through Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
The customs people there were about as uneducated as you could hire. They couldn't spell French. He said his last name was LeBeau. And they said, okay, and wrote down Weirdo. Maybe they were joking. So the family was Weirdo.
That is tragic.
They just accepted it. They went, well, they made a mistake at Ellis Island, but we have to live with it now forever.
That was the legal document, right?
If that was the price they had to pay to be in the United States, they were willing to accept that.
Wow.
They probably didn't know what it meant to begin with.
Oh, I guess not.
So the guy I know grows up to be a big-time engineer with one of the foreign auto importers, car manufacturers. He's coming back from a trip. He's in Cincinnati. It's on a Friday. And he's waiting in the airport. And the announcer comes out and says, paging Mr. John Weirdo. Mr. John Weirdo to the white courtesy phone. And then he keeps the microphone open for about 30 seconds and says, I just don't believe it. That was Friday. Monday, he went to a lawyer to have it changed back.
Sure. Yeah, LeBeau is a much more common name than Weirdo. Oh, that's crazy.
That's pretty interesting, Carl. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks. Take care.
At that point, wouldn't you just go, it's pronounced Weirdo?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, just to
change
it up.
I know it's spelled that way, but the pronunciation is Weirdo. Right.
I do not think I could be a teacher, because that is the hardest part of a teacher's job, I think, is to get all the kids' names right.
Impossible.
I really can't do it.
Although a lot of teachers use that system. I remember seeing, like, I'd go up to the teacher's desk and I'd see she'd have like this placement card that showed where all the kids sit and their names.
Like spelled out phonetically?
Yeah. So that's a little bit, I mean, I would do that too, so I can't even call it a cheat, but if that's how you have to do it, that's how you have to do it.
Yeah, but pronouncing some of the names, you can't even do phonetics for your name. It's just what it is what you get.
That's it. I know.
You're lucky. I get Schneider all the time. There is,
and I don't know why. Those are two separate names, though.
Well,
Snyder,
it derived from that, but there is no SCH in mine.
Right.
It's just SNY.
That's strange.
All the time.
Yeah.
And then we've interviewed people, Rob Schneider, for instance, who gets Snyder all the time, and that's bothersome to him. Snyder's better.
Is it better? Yeah, it is.
In my opinion.
Can we get more calls in, or do you want to take the text? It's up to you. I know you don't believe any of these, do you? I'm looking at the same screen you're looking at. You're like, nobody has those names.
All right, Brian, you're the last call on this. What do you got?
Oh, my God, you guys are cracking me up. I got to jump in on the 12-year-old bandwagon here. This goes back a number of years ago when I was traveling for work, and I was in Kansas and met a client whose name was Richard Wrinkle.
Are you sure?
Richard Wrinkle. Everybody has a friend of a friend who's right. named Richard something.
Wrinkle, right?
And he did go by Rick.
Yeah. That's the safest option.
I don't blame him. Yeah, probably.
It is.
So, yeah, some of these names I'm hearing this afternoon are just cracking me up, and it just totally made me think of that. I forgot about that name.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people on hold, Brian, that wanted to add their Richard stories, like their last name of head and liquor,
yep.
and there you have it.
But we can't do those.
Well, that would be.
That would be bad.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. You don't want to go down that road.
No.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
A friend of mine, when I was growing up, his dad worked for a company with offices all over the world, including Asia, where he met his counterpart in Asia, and his name was Peter Pan. And when he came to the United States, he didn't know that that name had any meaning. Like, he knew his own name was Peter Pan because it had been his whole life. But when he came here, everybody either thought he was joking or they did do some take on his name. And he didn't understand that. Why is that funny that my name's Peter Pan?
It's all lost in the translation.
It is. It is.
A guy with an unusual name, Art Alexakis.
Oh, yeah, from Everclear.
He's probably canceled.
No, I'm sure. I'm positive. All right. News is next. Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
The waiting is the hardest part, and we're going to keep waiting at airports. Joining us in the studio right now, our own Ryan Burrow, also ABC News correspondent. Hello, Ryan.
Howdy. Howdy.
All right. So
appropriate music. Good job, Kevin.
Isn't that nice?
he's a sharp one.
Yep.
Today. all right. When you're I'm kidding, Kevin. So going to the airport, I learned my lesson one time. I didn't get there 2 hours before a flight, and it was at O'Hare, and we were basically doing the O.J. Simpson running through.
Mm-hmm.
Got to TSA, got to the
O.J. Simpson? Oh, the O.J. Simpson commercial. I always think of Home Alone. You remember that scene where they're all running
yeah,
with their
sure.
bags?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Anyways,
yeah.
Like Hertz, you know? Yeah. That was, he jumped, hurdled
yes,
over things.
Yes, I remember now.
We almost missed our flight, and then here I am at the security line going, I have a knee replacement. Can I just get through? And they said, we have body scanners now, so you don't have to go down a special line. You really almost always need the full 2 hours, if not more. What's going on?
Yeah, there's something that's going on now. First of all, TSA's had to slash a bunch of jobs, thousands of jobs. So as a result, you're probably seeing fewer people who can actually check you out as you go through security. The shifts have changed a little bit, and so that's one reason the lines have gotten longer. There are some new regulations, new things they're looking at, which also slows down the process. And don't forget, the economy's doing a little better. People have a little more money in their pockets. They're flying more. And as a result, we're expecting maybe a record-setting travel period this summer. So, you know, you've got a bunch of factors. You know, the choke points are getting tighter, and more people are trying to fly. And as a result, we've seen longer lines.
Years ago, after 9/11, actually, they added security taxes. They added, you know, there's a fee that you have to pay to pay people like the TSA.
It was nominal, wasn't it?
I think they said on average of $12 to $15
yeah,
a flight.
Yeah.
So we're still paying that. Why are they not paying the TSA agents?
You know, I mean, it's...
They fired them.
Yeah. They did.
Everyone's had cutbacks. At some airports, they've actually pulled TSA agents out. They've got private...
Right.
And there have been many, many discussions about, you know, maybe this isn't the way to do it. Maybe we don't have a singular or two choke points, you know, to get into security. Maybe we do it at the gate, or we find some other way to do it. Maybe, you know, everyone goes, you get your ticket, you go to, you know, F28 or whatever, and then the security check is done there. Maybe that's a possibility.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Well, but now think about a place at O'Hare where you've got, you know, hundreds of these.
I mean,
well,
yeah, I guess.
You know, you've got some that are big, some that are small. I mean, I have to tell you, and flying out of O'Hare is a completely different beast than flying out of some of these smaller airports. I mean, I've been, you know, to some of these, I mean, even Milwaukee, I mean, it's a breeze to get in and out, but you know, you get a big one like LAX, like.
And Midway's turned into O'Hare. Have you been there recently? I can't believe it. Midway, you could just pretty much drive up, get on a plane.
Sure.
It's expanded immeasurably.
I was in Columbia, South Carolina covering the campaigns, and I actually got into the wrong terminal and I just popped right back out, went back through security and went into the right one, and it was no problem. So, you know, it's a problem too in some of these bigger airports like JFK, like O'Hare.
So now
Atlanta.
They're saying, for a while they were saying get there an hour before your flight, longer if you're flying to another country. Mm-hmm. But now they're saying 2 hours. Is 2 hours enough time?
Doesn't it run the gamut?
Like on one day it will be enough time. The next day you're cutting it really close.
Sure. You know, I mean, if you're flying business and you're hoping to get out of work, you know, to get in that flight, you know, you may be in trouble. You know, if you're going out for leisure and you've got a little bit more time, it's probably better to get there and hang out and eat at the McDonald's and, you know, do whatever it is you do while you wait just to make sure that you can get through on time. But, you know, there's a new campaign, and that's one of the reasons I'm on right now, by this group called Airlines for America. It's essentially a group created by the airline industry, and they want you to, if you've got a problem while you're standing in line, take a photo of it and tweet it out to @AskTSA with the hashtag #IHateTheWait. Now, we know that all major movements in America have come as the result of Twitter hashtags.
Sure, of course.
Right?
Yeah, it'll make a big difference. They ask that you not take pictures of the TSA agents, however,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. There's still some security concerns there. But, you know, the feeling is, to let the TSA know, you know, hey, we're stuck and, you know, this is taking a long time. Maybe you need to staff this. And it's also a way to let them know kind of where some of the, you know, worst parts are,
right.
You know, where some of the worst lines are. Maybe they've got a repetitive line that continues to be bad in one location or another that they can figure out.
Can I want to bring back something from a couple of weeks ago. We didn't talk about this with you, Ryan, but this was a story a couple of weeks ago that I had first thought was a joke, but it's not a joke. I have it here on the internet. TSA
It
means it's real. It's always real if it's on the internet. The TSA had a plan in place. Now, this plan was voted down where they would screen passengers after their flights.
Now, what? This is from The Onion.
It's not from The Onion.
Dude, you get stuck by this all the time.
It's legit.
What's RT.com?
That's the Russian television.
It's Russian television.
Yeah, it's usually there's a lot of... well, it is a news outlet, and
it's legit.
It's based, yeah. It's basically Russian news in various locations. If you go to Europe, you'll see it quite more prominently than here in the States.
But how could they not know that anybody who's bringing something contraband on a flight? They're going to do whatever they want to do and then not worry about the consequences later.
I think if Congress had a chance to get their hands on that, they'd say, wait a minute, that doesn't make
any
sense.
There's no way.
You know, yeah.
There is no way that could be true.
Yeah, it was true. It got voted down. They decided against it. But
I wonder why.
They were trying for a little while to convince people, no, it's much better for everybody. We'll check everybody after the flight.
I mean, one of the options is, and I hate to say it, is, you know, I mean, we all love our cheap tickets, but I mean, maybe... lessen the lines and lessen the load. Maybe you make tickets more expensive. And obviously, this group, Airlines for America, doesn't want that to be the case. They want the security situation to get figured out. And, you know, since 9/11, we've all been kind of in this weird period where, you know, we all want safety. But on the other hand, we're looking at our watches saying, I gotta catch this flight, you know.
I have to be honest. I know that it's a bigger imposition now than it was prior to 9/11. Mm-hmm. However, I'm okay with it. Take your time. Check everybody. I don't want any mishaps.
And I want to jump in on the side of the TSA because you get your people who get to getting their trays and they're up there and they don't take their shoes off and they wait for the TSA agents to go, you're going to have to take your shoes off and your belt. My shoes? My belt? Are you kidding? We know this by now.
But they have changed it a couple of times. They've gone back and forth with shoes.
I have always, the kids can leave their shoes on. I have always had to take my shoes off.
Yeah. And have you in the last 2-3 years gone through without getting a full body scan? Because remember, that was only supposed to be, they were going to do a few at a time. But now every time, I think we all go through, right? Have you?
Yeah. I mean,
it's a
And then you put the hands up, you step in, you put the hands up.
It's fun, though. You act like you're doing a jumping jack, and you know, it's like a puzzle. You have to match.
Once again, it's fun when you're going on vacation. It's not fun when you've got to catch a flight because, you know, that's leaving in 20 minutes. And, you know.
And what's harder is when you travel with the families. I can't believe we ever did this, and you have younger children, mm-hmm. Ryan. It is a big, fat pain in the ass. You have to take the kid out of the stroller. You have to take the jacket off the kid. You have to take your computer out of the bag. I mean, see why I don't even like to travel?
Okay, so a few years ago, I was traveling with my mom. We were going to Ireland, right? She goes through the security, takes her shoes off. Only one shoe comes out on the belt.
What? How did that happen?
A shoe disappeared.
That's not good.
You know, it went in there and it didn't come out here. And I go to the TSA person and they're like, and, you know, she looks around. Well, of course, she doesn't get up. She looks around on her stool. And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, well, this woman.
Right.
You got to get her
she's
shoe.
She's flying across the ocean. She needs another shoe. So I kind of went into the forbidden area where she was sitting. It was under her stool.
Oh, no.
The shoe had fallen off under her stool.
You're lucky you found it, Steve.
Right. And so think of that next time you're worried about them checking you.
Oh, my God. Lou Manfredini wants to jump in on this conversation we're having. Hey, Lou.
I didn't want to go on the air, but Kevin made me.
Yep.
Well, that's what a lot of people say on the show.
I travel all the time. I'm on an airplane at least two, sometimes three times a week.
Yeah.
Didn't the TSA get their funding from an extra fee that we pay when we buy a ticket?
Yeah, that's what I said that earlier.
Yeah, Bill mentioned that, so but go on.
If travel is going up, that means more people are buying tickets. Why is it that the TSA is backing off on the amount of people that are at the lines? I mean, I'm in the lines all the time. I'm always in this TSA pre thing because I don't have to go through the scanner because they have all my information. That line is as long as any other line now.
Because everybody's doing that.
I know.
It's like it's not special anymore. That's supposed to be for frequent travelers. Because when Bob and Marianne worked here, they said how they did it and they could get through very quickly. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out that those lines were just as long as the others because people were pre-registering or whatever that is.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I'm not special anymore?
Well, no, you're still special, Lou. Don't say that.
Okay, but this is like dollars and cents. So in other words, if we're paying the extra fee every time we buy a ticket, and the TSA is backing off on the amount of people that they're going to put on the job, where is all the money going? You know what it sounds like? A great topic for the Wintrust business lunch.
Ah,
the man never stops.
That's true, though, because if you're imposing.
Remember, though, how much technology has changed since that time. Now we do have the full body scan, so I think there's a lot more that they've been investing. They've also, I think they've been investing a lot more into the technology that's used. I guess we'd have to really, you know, take a comb and go through their full budget, but obviously they do have some manpower issues.
And
right
it
now.
Is the passengers. I'm sorry, Lou, don't you see people that really are like completely taken aback because they're like, what do you mean I have to take my belt off? My shoes, too?
Oh, my gosh. And the other thing, too, that drives me crazy is, look, I get it that we can't do any profiling. I understand that. But I will see that they will randomly take some, you know, person that is obviously, I mean, anybody with common sense would say, this person is not a threat. Right.
I get my hands swabbed. Every time I travel, and I don't even really know what that means, they're looking for gunpowder on my hands. Look at me. I look like somebody who is lost, doesn't know her way around the airport, just wants to get a cold beer, and every time I get swabbed.
Well, see, that's funny, because if I was a TSA and I saw you, I think I would kind of pull you out.
All right, Lou, we're getting a bad connection.
Remember, too, a lot of the bad guys do like to take advantage of people who may not look as though they're
like a child or a grandma in a wheelchair.
See, like, you know, an elderly woman with a bag, and they might say, "Hey, let's slip the drugs in her bag," and then she goes through. That's why, you know, I mean, it may not be that person who's physically the problem, but
Grandma, you know, Isis. That's her name.
That's her code word.
That's right.
They obviously clearly
Grandma
have
Isis to the front desk. Please, Grandma Isis.
She is not going
to
go.
No, she's smarter than
Paging
that.
Paging passenger Isis.
Right. Lou, thank you for checking in.
Thanks, Lou.
This is something that will not be figured out easily. And you know, I mean, it's just moving people from point A to point B and getting them through in a secure way as quickly as possible. We still have not figured this equation out.
Isn't that
out.
Crazy?
I still don't think any countries have. I mean, really, it's a small price to pay.
I agree.
I mean, I feel bad for business travelers who do that all the time. For those of us who take a vacation here and there,
right?
It's an extra hassle, but to me, it's worth it for the safety.
I know. Can you stay for a little bit, Ryan?
Sure, why not?
All right. I know there's a lot of calls. Stay where you are. We'll get to those calls next. Calls and text at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
The wait keeps getting longer. TSA agents, I don't know. Every time I come across them at the airport, they're doing a fine job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all their fault.
No, it's not their fault. They cut jobs. What can they do?
We were talking about it with Ryan Burrow. There is a place that you can hashtag IHateTheWait.com. You can use the hashtag IHateTheWait. And basically what you're going to do is document how long it takes you to get through a TSA line at various airports.
It ebbs and flows, you know, at certain points. We've seen, you know, I've been covering stories and it'd be, you know, 1:30 in the afternoon on a Tuesday and the line will be snaked all the way down. You know, what the heck is going on here? You know, that doesn't make any sense. And within a half hour, it'll be, you know, back down to its normal size. And you know, it's just a matter of staffing, times, locations. We've seen during holiday travel periods, I believe it was O'Hare and Midway both got, you know, very heavily criticized for some of those lines. Some people said the lines extended over a mile because.
Really?
They had some issues with staffing, whether it would be people calling in sick or, you know, one form or another.
Can I tell you, I always thought that the TSA station was open 24 hours, especially at a major airport like O'Hare. When one of my daughters, Kylie, went to Costa Rica in October or November, she had a 5 a.m. flight. We got her there around 3:30, 4 o'clock. The TSA post was closed until 5 o'clock. Her flight was at 5:05. They just closed it for a couple hours in the middle of the night. That's not a good idea when you have international travel.
Was she supposed to get on at like midnight or so? Or get through it at like
she
midnight?
Made it, but she said by seconds. By the time she was done there, she ran to the... you know, the gate and just made it.
Sure.
So.
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, the issue is now, you know, some people are saying maybe we don't need the TSA. Maybe these airlines can figure out better ways to do it on their own. If you're flying American, maybe we put it on American
so
Airlines.
So every airline
United
would be responsible
airlines.
For their own
that's one way
checkpoint.
That's one way to do it. Maybe put it on the airport itself rather than having a big federal unit. Why don't you have it so that, you know, O'Hare handles, you know, hires an independent or a private company to handle the security, and Midway does it, and Milwaukee does it, and Indianapolis or whomever, you know, handle it that way perhaps is an option. But, you know, there have to be obviously some kind of standards. You don't want it to be, you know, hey, let's go, you know, we can get our drugs through Cincinnati's airport, but we can't get it through, you know, through Chicago. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I guess just allow better. There's something to be said for getting there a little early. You get through it all and you can go have a little breakfast or a Bloody Mary.
A little early is one thing. But once it gets over 2 hours, that seems excessive, doesn't it? Doesn't it seem like you don't want to spend a whole day at the airport?
Well, and remember, too, they want you to spend money there.
Sure, of course.
So keep that in mind.
Well,
the prices
are great. You've been at an airport. You get a decent amount of food for a low price.
I mean, one of the reasons that they pulled some of those walkways out at O'Hare was because, you know, they realized that the people were using the moving walkways and going right by the restaurants and bars. And, you know, if you pull them out, then you can bounce back and forth and do more shopping.
Is this a big conspiracy?
No, I don't think that's the case. TSA operates at a federal government level.
Yeah, but if O'Hare decides to let go of some of the TSA agents...
It would be at a federal level. It's not O'Hare that would do it. I'm sure O'Hare would love as many TSA
from
Potbellies as possible.
Do you think that's what's going on?
Maybe the government's getting kickbacks from Potbellies.
It's possible. Stranger things have happened, Ryan. Ryan, thank you. Great job on this. It's Ryan Burrow
from
upstairs.
Glad to start the conspiracy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Upstairs in the newsroom. We'll take a quick break, then some news, and then Art Alexakis will be joining us in studio. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I was just Snapchatting.
With whom? The world? The rest of the world?
Just took a picture of our control board.
Yeah.
Because I'm a radio geek.
Art Alexakis, who is, you know, an accomplished musician. He's with Everclear, performed solo. He's fantastic. He is a little bit late. He's at, he's stuck at TSA, but he said he will get here very shortly. You told us a story earlier.
Oh, yeah.
That was a very suspect story about your husband.
I was driving this morning, coming in a little late, and I was listening to this.
You heard this then, right,
Steve?
I did.
I was worried, concerned.
Didn't you think it was the end of the marriage for Wendy and Jimmy? Well, I thought it was all over.
I thought it was a test.
Well, it wasn't a test. I just know that, let me just make it real quickly. We were at the Home Depot on Mother's Day because Jim was helping me get some mulch.
It's a typical Mother's Day gift.
20 bags.
Please don't feel unusual. I think a lot of guys
say Mother's Day with shredded bark.
Dude, they were only $2 a bag. So
it's a bargain.
It was the day to get out there. So sure. He went with me. We loaded up the Jeep, and he handed me something and said, "Is this yours?" And I said, "Yes." It was a lipstick tube, mm-hmm. MAC makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of put it in my purse. And this morning, I after he had gone out last night, I went to grab the lipstick and I opened it to put it on. And it was a completely different color than anything I've ever worn.
Much darker.
We put a little tester of it up at our Facebook page at Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. So I called him and said, did you have someone in the car, or are you transgendering? Because mm-hmm. there is some lipstick in here that is not my color.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Oh yeah, remember I found that in the car, and I noticed that it was MAC makeup, a MAC lipstick tube. I know that's the brand you use." So he gets points for being detail oriented.
He does.
And yeah. So I said, "Is this yours?" And you grabbed it, and you said, "Yes, it is." And I said, "Well, I assumed it was mine if it was in the car." And he goes, "Yeah, it's not." I said, "No." He goes, "Well, I didn't really find it in the car." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "When we opened up the door at Home Depot, it was in the parking lot, and I just thought it fell out of the car, so I handed sure. it to you." So I had some stranger's lipstick in my car that I almost put on my lips.
And as bad as that would have been, it's better than the alternative, which is there's another lady in his life. So you with terrible taste in lipstick, much darker shade than she needs to dress herself up. But the story has a happy ending. He's not cheating on you.
No.
And he's not working at the Baton Club. So what are you complaining about? Everybody's happy.
I wish it was the latter because we could use some extra income right. and he'd be good.
Yeah. A lot of singles, Jimmy. Where are all these singles coming from?
He'd make a good tall Liza Minnelli.
Yeah, he would probably. He definitely would.
But so I saw Judy Pilak upstairs, and she said to me, "I do not buy that."
Yeah.
I do.
She
and
was doubting
whatever.
It.
But so no D-I-V-O-R-C-E for us.
Well, that's good news. But now, in light of that, I found something that I think will help you. They did a study at the University of Washington at the psychology department. They've been working on this study to determine what is a telltale sign, what is a predictor that you and your partner are going to get a divorce.
When you find a foreign lipstick color in your car?
I think more times than not, that is one of the signs. But they've come up with some of them. Can I run these past you and tell me if you agree or disagree that if any of these things are going on in your relationship...
It's not looking good?
Yeah, you might want to get your affairs in order because it's a bit... or maybe your affairs being in order is the problem. But all of these are telltale signs, according to research at the University of Washington, that you are headed toward a path of destruction. Ready?
Yeah.
Realize that delivery is everything. I will explain. Remember, it says here, it's not what you say, but it's how you say it that makes all the difference. Contempt often comes in the form of name-calling, snickering, sarcasm, eye-rolling, and long, heavy sighs. Now, they said, because I read this study earlier...
Can I just say, Jim, I am not having an affair. I'm just like that.
Yeah, that won't work. That won't work.
I am just snippy. It's not because of anything else other than I'm harried.
But they...
harried.
Right.
Harried.
Harried. They say if you're those things, if you're the kind of person that calls your loved one a name or just snickers whenever they suggest something or uses heavy sarcasm or you roll your eyes or long, heavy sighs...
That's totally me to everything he says, unfortunately.
Isn't that interesting? That's... Because I have to say... You know my wife, she also plays heavy on the sarcasm, and I do
know.
Too. But sometimes it's toward each other, and sometimes it's not, but it's never a sign that we're going our separate ways.
And it's not, I'm sorry, being mean and teasing are two entirely different things.
Sure.
And believe it or not, when you're with someone, sometimes one of them does something, either it's me or him,
yeah,
does something so stupid that you say, like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Yeah, right.
So there's
right.
going to be some of that going on.
Yeah.
Sarah and I have, well, she implemented the rule that the meanest thing that we can call each other is either dummy or dingus.
And those two were chosen because why?
Because they're not that bad, yeah. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Dingus is a fun word, too. I just like it.
It's popular with the 13-year-old boys.
They're dinguses.
But you could see where, over time, this could build up. If every time you said something, if you guys were out with another couple, and every time you said something, Jimmy just rolled his eyes like, here we go.
No,
here
it's
we
the
go.
Other way around. He says stuff, and I
roll
my
eyes.
And
you roll your
eyes? I heard this one.
Well, according to research, be careful, because these are bad. It says here, you need to ban the word whatever from your vocabulary.
I cannot do that.
When you say whatever to your partner,
whatever,
you're basically saying you're not going to listen to them. This sends them a message that whatever they're talking about is unimportant and has no merit to you. Is that true?
No. When you say whatever, it means that they are not listening to you and you're not going to get through to them. So you just go, whatever, and you walk away. That's better than calling them something worse than a dummy or dingus.
Well, like what? What would you call them?
I don't want to get fired. But, I mean, I think when you say whatever, it's out of sheer exasperation that you're not making your point.
It means you can't win this.
But I'm the one, like, if I say whatever, it's like I'm not going to get through to him. If he says it, then, you know, no matter what he does, he's not going to change my mind. That's what I think whatever means.
Is a married whatever more potent than when a teenager says whatever?
It's whatever's whatever.
You think it's the same? Do
it's
you?
It's dismissal in either case.
Right.
Whatever.
I guess so. But wouldn't it hurt more if you got that from your husband than if you got it from your sons? Wouldn't it hurt a little bit more?
I don't like to hear it.
No matter who says it, it's bad.
So you're a giver, not a taker.
Yes. It's just sometimes when you feel you're never going to win the argument, you just kind of go, whatever, meaning I don't want to talk about it anymore because I'm not gonna win, so whatever.
It's agreeing to disagree. Yeah. You know there's no progress being made.
Right.
Right? Yeah. All right. How about this one? Is this a sure telltale sign that you're headed toward divorce? You need to stay clear, it says here, of sarcasm and mean-spirited jokes.
That's what you guys are made about.
My wife and I, our relationship, and we've been together for 32 years, I'd say 80% of it is sarcasm and mean-spirited jokes.
Not really mean-spirited, though. I guess
some of them are.
We are.
Not all of them, but some of them are.
Dude, you and I are cruising for a divorce court.
I don't think so.
I don't either. I think this is the craziest list.
I don't
list.
Think so. It says,
here's one. If you find your husband in bed with another woman or vice versa, bet you're headed for a divorce.
That's bad. Yes, it is. It says, avoid sarcasm and comments like, I'll bet you do, or, oh, that was super funny, in a rude tone of voice. While you're at it, don't make jokes at the expense of your partner or make universal comments about his or her gender. You would say, you're a guy. Like anything that ends in, well, you would say that. You're a guy. Or, well, that's what you would think. You're a girl. Now, that seems juvenile to me.
Who wrote this and how old were they?
A girl named Emily Swanson. She's a fourth grader at Altadena Middle School.
That's what it sounds like. This is outrageous.
This is outrageous.
Whatever.
All right. We have a couple more of these, and then Art Alexakis will be joining us of Everclear fame. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Now, there are people on this show that are sarcastic and we're not mean to each other.
I don't think so.
But we are. You are just Mr. Sarcasm.
Yeah. And I don't think that's bad. This is the way, I don't know, I'm not with your family, but I told you the other day on Mother's Day that my daughters and my wife made fun of me for 15 minutes because I told them a story that involved the International House of Pancakes, and they thought that was so funny that I was calling IHOP International House of Pancakes, like I was trying to dress it up to be something hoitier and toitier than it really is, And I'm explaining to them that's what it was called when I was a kid. But they thought it was hysterical that people from other lands, from other countries, would visit the International House of Pancakes and sit down and have pancakes as though it were a big cultural event.
There was no reason for them to make fun of you because that's what the name of the place was.
Right.
And according to this article, your family's divorcing.
Right. We were all, yeah, I'm on my way out, apparently. It says here, now these are all, this is according to a study over at the University of Washington, their psychology department. They were trying to find things that you should not do in your marriage unless you want to be divorced.
Sleep with your neighbor.
Well, you shouldn't do that, Wendy. That's a commandment. That's not even the University of Washington. That's from the tablet. It says, don't live in the past. Do you live in the past?
No.
Most couples start showing contempt because they have let a lot of things build up over the years. To avoid contempt altogether, you need to stay current in your communications along the way. And if you're unhappy about something, you need to say it directly. Also, acknowledge the valid complaints that your partner has about you. Do you do any of those things?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I do too.
We communicate. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you say, don't do that. That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's just communicating what you want to get across.
That's right. That's right.
I don't think we use the word stupid.
Well, I'm exaggerating slightly.
Kevin said use the word dingus instead of stupid. It's better.
Yeah, you dummy.
That's better. Thanks, Kevin. You have to live in the past to some extent. Because
I don't live in the past.
You don't live in the past at all?
That's
how you remember where your socks are.
But to some extent, if the past, like, our past was really good. So you'll
but
say,
it's over.
Remember the time we did this? That was fun.
That's memories. That's not living in the past.
That's not the same?
That's not saying, you know, God, we used to have it so good back then. What's happened to us now?
That would be terrible.
Yeah. You've got to live for today.
Live for today.
That's grunge. True.
Grunge.
Grassroots.
It says, watch your body language. I bet that's true.
Well, that could be a good thing,
That's
too.
That's got to be true. If you find yourself rolling your eyes or smirking, it is a signal that your relationship could be headed for trouble.
Bill, they do that to you a lot.
Who does that? My family does that?
Don't tell them that.
No, he admits it. I feel bad. They smirk and roll their eyes several times.
It's usually deserved. It's almost always deserved. I roll my eyes at myself sometimes. I go, I just did that? Seriously? Try taking a break from each other if things get heated. How long of a break? Like a year? 2 years? Hey, remember that guy who used to live in the house? You mean Dad? Yeah.
Don't live Never in the happened. Past.
Well, yeah, right. There's a new guy living in there now.
I live in the past. Live in Budapest.
Do you just let your mouth talk, Steve?
I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
See, now, if you guys were married, I'd be afraid you were getting a divorce. I'd ask who was going to get custody of me right now.
But see, there's nothing wrong with having fun with people at your own and other people's expense.
As long as the other person knows that it's fun.
People thought, Steve, very frequently when I first started here with you and with Bill, they thought Steve and I didn't like each other. It's we do.
Right.
Well, we do now, yeah.
Well, I always did. But, I mean, see what I mean? You tease the people you love. If it's someone you don't know very well, you're not going to be snippy to them because you don't want to offend them. If it's someone you know and you're comfortable with, I think it all's fair in love and sniping.
And sniping, sure. It says, Wendy, this one's true. Don't ever tell your spouse you're overreacting. Never say you're overreacting to anything. When you say that someone is overreacting, what you're really saying is that their feelings are unimportant to you. Instead of telling your partner that they're overreacting, listen to their point of view and try to understand where they're coming from and why they feel that way. That's pretty obvious.
Duh.
That's obvious.
This whole thing should be entitled, Duh. I mean, seriously. This is so terrible.
She says, rolling her eyes and saying, whatever.
Yeah, I know. I know.
This is the basic stuff.
But they did a study.
University
of Washington.
I got a better study.
What's your study?
Just respect one another.
Yep.
I mean, that's really all it is.
Yep.
And if, you know, Jim should act more. He doesn't overreact about anything.
Is that true? Is there no? There's got to be some reaction.
No, there's reaction, but he never overreacts, which is good. There's a yin and a yang. I overreact about overreact about everything.
Yeah. No, we wouldn't know that.
He is, He is more the mellow fellow. So, I mean, that's what happens. It's a fluctuating yin and yang.
So, in your story about the lipstick where he didn't react much to it, like you were... You weren't panicking, but
no,
you're like,
but
well,
I wondered why there was
on.
Some foreign color lipstick in my car. Like, who was in my car?
Who wouldn't? That's natural.
I thought he lent our car to someone.
Yeah. Someone with a lot of lipstick.
Like, and really dark. It's like a, it's called Cyber, the MAC makeup, if you'd like to look it up. There's a picture on our Facebook page. It's like burgundy black.
Right. It's really, so, yeah. So did you like, did you give our car to Avril Lavigne? Where was our car yesterday?
That's who I thought.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
But I'll tell you, it was a little unnerving for a half a second going, oh, I'm going to put this not my lipstick.
Right. That's an awkward moment, I bet.
That's because it was found on the parking lot at the Home Depot in Countryside. If it's your MAC lipstick, let me know. I'll return it.
Free of charge. All right, we need to take a break and then some news. Steve has the news and then more show. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Remember this song?
I do. I enjoy this song a lot.
He's from the West Coast.
Yeah.
Art Alexakis, Songs and Stories, going on tonight at City Winery, 1200 West Randolph Street in Chicago. One of my favorite venues. It's intimate. They have their own wine that they make there that is mm-hmm. really good. Mm-hmm. And it's a great place to see someone. Art is doing kind of a solo thing, Songs and Stories. He's had a pretty tumultuous life, to say the
least.
That's
an understatement. He's had certainly a lot of good things happen, but not all good things happen.
Although, and, don't bad things make good things come?
Well,
isn't that a song?
Yeah, Someday, I think Mama. It is, actually, yeah. I think it is.
I can't think of it right now.
Later.
But you and I were talking about this. Some tragic things in life can either make you or break you. Mm-hmm. There's a list of things that are supposed to be one of the most stress-filled moments of a person's life.
Yeah.
Like having a baby.
Switching jobs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Getting married.
A loved one die.
Oh, yeah.
That would be awful, right?
In 1997, when you and I worked at Q101 radio station, which is the first time we interviewed Art Alexakis,
mm-hmm.
we were so alternative.
We were, yeah. And you were a lot younger. I'm the exact same age, but you were much younger then.
I had bigger hair.
Yes.
I really did.
I couldn't see the producer. I knew he was back behind your hair, but I couldn't see him.
1997, we did morning radio, which was tough in itself, getting up at 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1 year's time, I figured this out. I got married.
Yeah.
A month later, my mom died.
Yeah.
A few weeks after that, we got fired.
Yeah.
Bought a house.
Uh-huh.
And got pregnant.
All
in 1 year.
A span of less than a year.
1997.
That's a big year. That's a lot of stuff going on at one time.
So I feel if I can make it through all that stuff in 1 year,
yeah,
I'm good to go.
The rest is easy, isn't it? The rest is easy.
Because
yeah.
those are like monumental things to make or break you, and
sure.
they all happened in the span of 1997.
Yeah. And then, but then, you know, you have some years where you just go, I don't think anything really major happened that year. Why couldn't that year have been spread out a little bit more, you know?
And Art Alexakis, some of these stories he's going to talk about are not pleasant. His brother died when he was 12 years old.
Yeah.
Heroin overdose.
Yeah.
And that kind of pushed him into drugs on his own. And then somewhere along the line, I guess he attempted suicide and was not successful, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled himself together, and the band Everclear came along. Then he suffered some other things like a divorce. A lot of things can change you, and that's what I guess is going on tonight, Songs and Stories. And we would ask Art Alexakis about that if he was here.
We're being told from reliable sources that he is just moments away. You know, after Lauryn Hill's story, she shows up 2 hours late to a job. Everybody else, if you're in under an hour, that's fine, I guess. So he'll be here.
Or on Roe Show.
Right. Yeah, because we run out. We only have 20 more minutes, so we're going to do our best to get him on. But he's running just a little bit late.
And then
they say Rockstar Parking. He's a rock star. Isn't he allowed to park right in front and say Rockstar Parking? Look, I'm a rock star.
I think he was walking. Either that or, as you pointed out, he might be coming down Michigan Avenue on a divvy bike.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know.
I hope it's not on the sidewalk.
We'll see. Now, one of the things we want to ask him, we were getting at this earlier, as to whether or not his band Everclear constitutes a grunge band or not.
Yeah, I don't think so. We were talking about him. Art has entered the studio. Art Alexakis. We were just telling your
great
whole life
you.
Story without you, so we're glad
right,
that you...
Sorry about me.
Have a seat, yeah.
I'd love to hear it.
All right, well, we'll sit out. Grab
it's a regular Tuesday segment, Art. Every Tuesday we do this, and you happen to be here. How are you? You look great. You do.
We were talking about this. Bill and I worked together at Q101 a million years ago, interviewed you there, and now we're not working at an alternative rock station.
What alternative rock stations?
That's the problem.
Really?
They're gone.
And we're older, all of us now, and we were talking a little about your songs and stories that's going on tonight at City Winery. It's a great venue. A lot of stories and a lot of bad things can inspire you to do good things.
Well, you know, I mean, that's kind of been the MO of my life, but really from what I've seen, and you know, we're all middle-aged.
I know,
and,
I hate to say that.
You know, I don't. I did for a while, and now I'm just embracing it, because let's face it, middle age on us looks better than it did for our parents.
Doesn't it?
That's true.
Do you remember when you'd look at someone who's 30 when you're like 20, and like, they look old.
Yeah.
And they really did look old when you look back at the pictures. I remember I looked at, like, I'm a big baseball fan, and if you've ever seen those, like the Ken Burns documentary on baseball, it shows these guys like Ty Cobb and these other guys, like when they're 28, and they look like they're 60.
Totally.
Like hard road 60. Like, you know, and
they were athletes. They were guys in their prime.
Yeah, but these guys had kegs and smoking
and
cigars and cigarettes in the dugout.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. That's kind of gangster. I'm sitting here clucking my tongue and shaking my head, but I'm also going, that's awesome. But what I was going to say is, like, yeah, you know, if you're going to live life and you're going to take bites out of life, you're going to take some bad bites. Sometimes not meaning to, sometimes out of choice. Sometimes you go, wow, this is the wrong thing to do and this is the right thing to do, but I really want to do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And you do it.
Yeah.
And you get your butt kicked.
And hopefully you survive that wrong thing.
Well, that's where the stories come from getting back up again. And for me, that's exactly what it's been. And I'm very proud of it because I'm at a place where I didn't necessarily envision myself being, but I love where I'm at. I love my family.
That's
my priorities.
Awesome.
Your priorities change too. It's not all about you. It is all about me because I want me to be happy. But what makes me happy really is just like I got love. I got the ability to work and make music. I make a living, a decent living.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not rich, but I make a decent living making music.
And music
I'm kind of winning, right?
You're totally winning.
You guys are winning.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not pushing papers in an office.
Right.
This is pretty flossy.
This
you got going
bad.
On here.
This is not bad.
Nah,
absolutely.
It could be a lot worse.
Oh, way worse.
You know, we were talking before you came about grunge music, and it bothers me to say Everclear was grunge music because, in my opinion, you got your Nirvana, you got your Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
To me, Everclear was not grunge, and we wanted to have your take on it.
I, to be honest with you, with most of the people that were in part of the grunge movement, grunge was not a thing to anybody except publicists.
I guess just a label
no
for them to say. No bands
walked around saying, "Hey, we're kind of grunge." That was after the fact. That was after, like, the Nirvanas, and even before the, like, Green River and, you know, and all the bands that they turned into, and the Melvins were around forever and ever. And that all, like, congealed to make Nirvana. And then this little, you know, white trash kid from Bellingham who put the Beatles and all this stuff together just kind of blew Seattle in half.
Yeah, I bet.
They didn't expect him, and they didn't really like him.
But
because he was good.
Yeah.
Couldn't you kind of say that about alternative music as well? Because when alternative music was at its peak, it was really top 40. It was the thing that was rebelling against. We were at an alternative station, but our playlist was the top 40. It wasn't alternative.
Well, that happens to everything. That happened to punk rock. It turned into new wave. It turned into postmodern.
Yeah.
And same thing with hip-hop. Hip-hop, when it first came out, was scary and bold, and then it turned into Chingy and Cisco, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's whenever the 1% gets their hands on it, goes, oh, we can make money off this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find these poor kids who are all angry and full of angst,
mm-hmm.
and keep them that way by taking all their money.
Right.
And they'll keep producing for us.
Right.
Woo!
Right.
You know, I mean, but as far as the grunge thing goes, you know, I mean, I moved to Portland, Oregon, because my girlfriend was from Portland, Oregon. She was living with me in San Francisco, but she got pregnant, and we decided we wanted to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved up there, and I was a pretty angry dude. You know what I mean? You
How
know,
old
I
went were we talking? Being,
huh?
How old at this
How
point?
How old was I?
Yeah.
30. So I moved up like about 6 months before I turned 30. My daughter was born a little over 2 months after I turned 30. And I totally got Peter Pan syndrome. So 30 for me, I'm a late bloomer for sure. But I, you know, we got there and I thought it was going to be a cool town. They hated me there because I was from California. And
really?
And you know, the local bands wouldn't give me gigs. The people that were booking the clubs loved my tape, which I made for $400 because I didn't have any money and I was digging a ditch, literally digging out a garden for a friend of my wife at the time or girlfriend at the time. You know, she's like, you make $200, go do this. And I'm digging out a ditch and I see these musician looking guys walking in the yard next door into a basement. I'm like, wow. They're either musicians or that's a drug deal.
Yeah,
either way, I want to go check that
what
out.
What do they have going down?
Yeah, I want to go check it out. And I talked to the guy and he recognized me because we were starting to make waves, but not really. And he showed me his little basement studio.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, man, this is awesome. He goes, yeah, it's $10 an hour. And I'm like, would you take a trade? I got this rack of two digital effects. Like, yeah, I'll give you $400 in trade for it. That's 40 hours. I go, I can make an album.
Nice.
We got 12 songs. Made it.
Nice.
And it was a demo. You know, it was every song I had because I wasn't sure if this band was going to happen.
Yeah.
But when we recorded it, it was like, it was there. And that became our first album, World of Noise.
That is one of the best albums. I've loved a lot of your stuff. I like the jangly sound to it. It's jangly. It's fresh.
It's distorted.
But there's meaning to it. Father of Mine, a great song. Is that going to be talked about in your songs and stories tonight at City Winery?
Yeah. That album, that's our third album, So Much for the Afterglow, which is the 20th anniversary to date all of us, is coming out next year.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's impossible to realize that was 20 years ago.
I'm pushing past middle age.
It doesn't make sense.
Where does middle age end?
The correct answer is
where you want it to end.
Right.
What did we just do that study where if you ask someone what middle age was, what did they say?
The most common answer now is 65 years old, which is true. If you're going to live to 130, 65 is middle age, but realistically, it should be 40 because the life expectancy of most of us is 81 or 82.
So we're in our twilight years? That sucks.
Yeah, yep. Yep.
Oh, my God. Getting old.
You know what? Call it what it is, man. I work out. I eat pretty much what I want to eat. I look pretty
you look
good,
good
for my age.
Yeah.
My wife is 20 years younger and smarter than me.
Score.
Score.
That's not bad.
Score.
And how old's your kid?
I have two kids. One's going to be 24 in June, and one's 8. Two daughters.
That's about
awesome.
Right. Every 16 years.
For a guy like me? Yeah.
Yeah,
I could totally pull like an Anthony Quinn and have one when I'm like 70, 75.
Tony Randall still has kids.
Yeah,
he's dead.
Been dead for 15 years, he still has
kids.
Well,
he shouldn't have children anyway at any age, but yeah. No, I'm taking care of that this year.
Good.
Should have been done a long time ago, actually. But, you know.
Get the frozen peas.
Yeah, that's what they say.
It conforms a little more than an ice bag.
I've been through a lot worse. I've been shot. I've been stabbed. I'm okay.
You
I got
have
tattoos
been.
All over my body. I can take a little bit of that.
And that's what this whole grunge thing started, because somebody at Newsweek.com, the most bewildering rock star cameo, would be for grunge era rock star Art Alexakis in the movie Wild.
Okay, I don't know why that's the most confusing, considering it was shot in Portland, and I'm covered in tattoos.
But I saw Art and didn't realize it was you until today. I saw the movie and loved the movie. It's Reese Witherspoon.
Excuse me. Acting?
I know you were acting. I know you were acting. But I didn't. I had no idea.
I put
it was
a
you.
Totally North Portland accent. No, I mean, you know. Well, the thing is, I know Cheryl Strayed, the woman who wrote Wild, who's phenomenal. I know her husband really well. And when they were reading through the script with Reese, she goes, I know someone who'd be great for this role, but this role originally was a woman with bleach blonde hair. And they're like, oh, we could turn it. This is the magic of movies.
Yeah,
you can turn that into a guy, no problem.
Sure.
And they wrote me this part with all these, like, I had to audition for Reese, and I had to audition for I did three auditions. Oh, for the director, Jean-Marc Vallée, who was coming off Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, yeah.
I had to audition for him, and I had to audition for other people. No one just gave it to me. It was like a little nepotism getting my name in the door. And then I got it. And when they first gave me the script, it was like 4 or 5 pages. And I'm doing this huge, like, didactic monologue of just like, you know, where I'm the wizened old sage. Like, you're really going to listen to a middle-aged man covered in tattoos, and he's going to tell you what life's all about. It was just stupid, like, you know, screenwriter 101 writing. But I learned it all. I nailed it. I got it all down. And I kept asking them through my management, through me, is there any changes on the script? Because I haven't seen any changes in a while. Nope. We're good. We're good. We get down there in the tattoo parlor, right? And I'm like minutes away. And the script gal is going around going, oh, you got the pink script? Oh, no, you got the green script? No, you need the pink script.
Oops.
They changed.
Oh, no.
All but two of my lines.
Oh, great.
They got rid of a lot, which I have no problem with.
Yeah.
Because they didn't end up cutting anything.
Right.
I mean, that's how Jean-Marc works. But I'm like, all the lines that they're going to say that cue me are gone.
Oh, no.
They changed the jump off lines. So I'm like, holy, I'm trying to read through it and ought. Yeah, I can't even do his accent. He's French Canadian.
Can you hold your thought? We have to take a quick break.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. No. We want to talk more. You were a little late. We have another show coming up at 3 o'clock that we want to get a song in at least. So can we take a quick break and come back? Okay. Art Alexakis, didn't mean to cut you off. Songs and Stories tonight, City Winery, 1200 West Randolph. Tickets still available. You can go to citywinery.com. Back in a moment. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right, it's Bill and Wendy here with Art Alexakis. He was so rudely interrupted by moi.
Yep.
We were talking about the movie you were in with Reese Witherspoon, Wild, and they changed your script, basically.
Well, anyway, they changed my script, and then the director just goes, okay, we're going to take a take. And so he takes a take, and, you know, Tommy Sadowski, who's a great actor, has become a really great friend of mine. Him and Reese Witherspoon are on either side of this table talking to me, and they're telling me this horrible story of their breakup and these breakup tattoos, and they changed my lines and they changed their lines, so they would say their line, and instead of me reacting to it, I just kind of stare at them and go, wow, that's Reese Witherspoon. Wow, she's really small. She's really small. The camera really does add 10 pounds. You know, and she's just like, Art, your name's Art, right? That's your cue? And I'm like,
oh, no.
And I got yelled at by the
director. Oh, no.
And I'm like,
did you do a real tattoo at least?
No.
Oh.
Oh, not at all. I have no idea how to do it. I was yelled at by the tattoo person. He didn't yell at me. He was awesome. But he's like, oh, you got to keep it up. It doesn't look real. I'm like, no one's going to pay attention.
Right.
Dude, I'm sorry to tell you, but no one's going to be looking at my tattoo gun. They're going to be looking at me.
Sure.
And Reese Witherspoon.
Probably.
Anyway, so that's the end of that lame story.
All right, he's Art Alexakis, and he is in action tonight. Songs and Stories at City Winery. And what are you going to do for us here?
Tune my guitar. There we go. I'm going to do an old song that you like a lot. This is called I Will Buy You a New Life. Now, which mic am I singing into?
The smaller of the two.
This
guy? Sure, yeah.
All right, well, good luck. Here we go. And by the way, I play this song and tell a really good story about being on welfare. So if you really want to hear that story, you got to come to the show tonight. Here's the money that I owe you. Yes, so you can pay the bills. I'll give you some more when I get paid again. I hate those people who love to tell you money is the root of all the cares. They have never been poor, never known the joy of a welfare Christmas. Yeah, I know we will never look back. Yeah. Then I wake up crying, and you don't know why. You get up and you go lay down inside my baby's room. Oh, yeah, guess I'm doing okay. Moved inside the dangerous guy. Can you believe he actually thinks that I'm really alive? I will buy you a garden where your flowers can bloom. I will buy you a new car, perfect, shiny, and new. I will buy you that big house way up in the West Hills. I will buy you a new life. Oh, yes, I will. I know all about that other guy, Hampton man with athletic thighs. I know all about the time before that obsessive little rich boy. They might make you think you're happy, yeah, maybe for a minute or two. They can't make you laugh, but they can't make you feel the way that I do. I will buy you a garden where your flowers can bloom. I will buy you a new car, perfect, shiny, new. I will buy you that big house way up in the West Hills. I will buy you a new life. I will buy you a new life.
That's beautiful. That's so beautiful.
That is so amazing. Thank you so much.
Sorry, my guitar was out of tune.
Come on.
Man, it was great talking with
you. Are you kidding? Anytime.
We could talk about pseudo middle age forever.
Well, come back and see us sometime and get here on time so we have more time to talk. Will you do that?
No, absolutely. And thank you guys for supporting us all these years.
Thrilled you, Art. You sound great. You
Art
really
Alexakis, musician, wonderfully cool middle aged guy. Can we say that?
Husband, dad.
Look at
soon to be author.
Look at that.
Music, song, life coach. I do a lot of stuff.
Life coach.
Yeah.
Awesome. You're coaching your own self pretty well. Citywinery.com.
Well, trying to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if my son didn't have a Madrigal concert tonight, I would be out there to see a City Winery tonight. Art Alexakis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
A quick break. We'll find out what's coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.